Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Trisha's True Crime Radio. And do we have a plethora of true crime stuff tonight? I'm just going to get right to it. And I know you're disappointed that you won't be able to hear me babble on for the first 5 minutes. But hey, there's always next week. Tonight's sponsor for Trisha's True Crime Radio would like to ask everyone who is able or inclined to please donate to the Travis Alexander Fund, www.travisalexanderfund.com, to assist the Alexander family with their expenses as the trial nears completion. It's still not completed, remember. She's found guilty, but we still have another penalty phase to go through. So the Alexander family, once again, I have to get into Arizona and give up time at work. It's going to be pretty tough. And tonight, like I said, a plethora. We have Cheryl McCollum. Cheryl is the director of the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute. We have Elaine Redwine. Elaine's going to update us on the search for her missing 14-year-old son, Dylan. And later in the show, Katie Wicks from the Dr. Drew Show, one of Dr. Drew's jurors. What a lovely, lovely person. She'll be joining us. But first off, we're going to give her the floor because she is so spectacular. It is our very own Kimster with the Web Sleuth's Hot Cold Case of the Week. Kimster, take it away, please.
Well, hello, Trisha.
Hello.
After you told me I got to go on first, I decided maybe I should have a late cup of coffee or something. So I'm perky.
I'm not used to going first.
Yeah, I need to start it out with a bang. So bang, everybody.
Bang. There we go.
Before I start with the cold case, I want to let the websleuth.com members know that we have opened a new sub-forum today on WebSleuth about the weather. We found many of our members want to discuss the weather with each other, and so now they have a place to gather. It's in the up-to-the-minute area, so check it out and say hello to Rain1212 while you're in there. She's heading up the show, and her name is Rain, so is that cool or what? I think that's great.
It is cool. Weather freak, so go in there and say, hi, weather freak, and she will welcome you with open arms and cloudy skies. So it's going to be a great new forum.
I wonder if she's going to be more accurate than my local weather stations.
Absolutely, I guarantee it.
Okay, good, because they're just terrible around. They can't keep up with Oregon weather. Let's see if Rain, with that kind of a name, Rain, she should be able to do it. So.
Absolutely.
Also, now I'm going to get back into true crime here. And I briefly spoke to the mother of Tia Payne this morning, Tricia, and her heart aches wanting to find her daughter's killer. She recently joined WebSleuth.com, and she said the members have already provided her a couple of resources she didn't know about before. And she told me that she's so happy to have found WebSleuth.com. So I want to shout out to you members at WebSleuth.com. Be sure to search for the name Tia Payne in the search engine there, who was murdered in August of 2010 in Arizona, because her mom really appreciates knowing that we care about her. All right. You ready?
All right. We're ready.
Do, 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 do.
Beautiful.
This week's cold case is by request, and it happened in Moss Park, Iowa. Around 9 a.m. on October 10, 1987, a fisherman discovered 14-year-old Kenny Joe Johnson's body near a floodgate in Moss Park. He was rolled in a 5-by-9-foot piece of yellow-orange nylon carpet that had been dumped at the park. An autopsy revealed he had been strangled by hand, and Tricia, he'd been sexually assaulted. He also had a small amount of alcohol in his system, 14 years old. But let me tell you, in his short life, he bounced around from school to school, and he lived in several different towns. He had behavioral problems, which likely stemmed from a learning disability that wasn't always handled appropriately. When he was in the first grade, Kenny Joe's teacher made him sit in the front row of class with a dunce cap on his head.
No. That teacher should be arrested. That's awful.
I know. Well, remember, this is a long time ago.
A long time ago, right. You know, yeah, that's true.
He was young, and they used to shoot children. There's so many ways we haven't come very far, but that is one way. You know, teachers don't get away with that anymore, and for that
right.
I'm very glad. There
Me
weren't
too.
Very many like that, but there were some. And anyway, on September 22nd, 1987, Kenny began his short stay at Hillcrest House, which was a residential treatment facility. But he ran away from that home three times, and the third time resulted in his eventual death. There are some clues to gather in this case. For example, after a story about the case was run in 1997, the owner of the carpet called the police, which led investigators to knowing that the killer found the carpet at a park. Local law enforcement remains very concerned about this case, and they still want it solved, which is awesome. Through the years, they have kept a detective active on Kenny's case at all times. Perhaps you're the one who can sift out that one more piece that will solve Kenny's murder. And if you want to help Kenny get justice in death, the kind of justice he never did see in life, please go to www.websleuths.com, and in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a picture of Kenny, along with a link to his thread, but only if you're a member of websleuths.com. So please join today. And Tricia, how much does it cost to join websleuths.com?
As we say in the great state of Utah, oh my flipping heck, it's absolutely free. Doesn't cost you a thing. We just need an email address. Kim, sir, thank you so much, and we will definitely take a look at that cold case on Web Sleuths, the Web Sleuths hot cold case at websleuths.com. And now we welcome our very first guest. This is somebody that I have admired for a long time, and she is a truly incredible person. Spends her whole life actually helping others and trying to solve cold cases. It's Cheryl McCollum. She is the director of the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute. And Cheryl, welcome to Tricia's True Crime Radio.
Thank you so much. It's always great to be with you in Kempster.
Well, let's get right to the George Zimmerman case. Fortunately, you're going to be our eyes and ears on the ground for this case. And I asked you before the show if you heard about the latest from the attorneys, and you hadn't, and I had not read very much about it, so I'm going to try and find it here. And it seems that there was a video that was put up, and it was they claimed it was Trayvon Martin beating up somebody, and it turned out it was two homeless guys. And the video was misrepresented by George Zimmerman's defense team, and they said they apologized for it. My question is, how can anybody believe George Zimmerman now? I mean, he lies about, and this is not going to be brought into the case, I know, but he lied about having a PayPal account to the judge, which got the judge very angry. And now the defense team is trying to portray Trayvon in a bad light. And if the evidence was legit, then yes, absolutely. But it wasn't. What the hell, I guess, is my question.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen it. I don't know anything about what you're talking about. I've been sort of on vacation with my kids, but you know, here's the thing. I find it hard to believe a seasoned attorney like George's defense attorney would not quadruple check something before they make it public, unless what they were relying on is somebody watching it, believing it, and never hearing that it was bogus. Like there are people that still believe there was a racial slur in the 911. It's not true, but there are people that never got that part of the story. They just heard the first part of the story. So, I mean, but I just find that hard to believe. But, you know, you and I talked early on in this, and we both agree that this is going to get ugly. And that's
very
really unfortunate. But sometimes, you know, the truth is just not what people are after.
Boy, that is the truth right there. Let me talk to you about the 911 call. First of all, NBC News edited the call to make it sound worse than it was. We know that. What you're saying is it's an absolute certainty somehow that George Zimmerman did not use a racial slur. Tell us about that.
Well, that had already come out, that he did not use, the word coon.
I thought that's what it sounds like to me.
Somebody put that in there. Now, he does use the word asshole. Yeah. That's already been cleared up, that somebody did that on purpose to release it.
I'm so far apart. I'm so far behind. So you mean somebody manipulated the tape and put that in?
Yes. When I first heard it, that's not a word you hear a lot.
Well, yeah.
And
it's
if
an
you
old,
do
odd
hear that word.
Word,
it's an old word, and it usually is used by elderly people. So I didn't think it kind of went with George anyway. But anyway, he does use the word asshole.
Well, that's,
and there's other things that I found out since we talked last that I want to be sure I make sure that I bring up. I read George's written statement that he gave the police, and I don't know if you've had a chance to look at that, but one of the things that I found the most interesting is he refers to Trayvon Martin as suspect throughout it.
The suspect.
Well, depends on your definition, but you just shot someone, and sounds like you might be playing a little bit of judge and jury and executioner, doesn't it?
That's if you call someone the suspect, that's exactly what
the
you're
suspect.
Doing.
Right.
Yes.
So I found that that choice of a word telling, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, again, I don't believe that George is going to take the stand. If I was his attorney, he wouldn't go anywhere near the stand. But if he does, one real easy first question would be, would you define suspect?
Yes.
Because there's nothing
what?
Positive in that word.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing.
It's always negative.
So,
you're right. If someone is suspect, it's a bad thing. Absolutely.
It's a bad thing.
Bad thing. So we have that now and in his statement.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're right. I don't think George Zimmerman will take the stand. What other misconceptions are there? Or things that we need to clear up, I should say.
Dee Dee, the girlfriend,
mm-hmm.
she told police that she told Trayvon to keep running. And Trayvon told her, I ain't running.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that goes toward what then? And what does that mean? He's running. He got away. George doesn't know where he's at. George couldn't have caught him if he tried. So why would somebody all of a sudden say, I ain't running? Does that mean he is turning and going to go look for George and confront him? Why are you following me?
Mm-hmm.
Does it mean he doesn't have to keep running because he feels like he's safe? But the way that she states it, she tells him, keep running, keep running. And he says, no, I ain't running.
Mm-hmm.
So then she hears the two of them talking to each other, and the phone goes dead.
That's been confirmed. Didn't she lie, though, at some point?
She lied about her
age. What did she say?
She said she was 16.
Mm-hmm. And how old was she?
18.
But didn't she lie about the content of what she heard, or was that just blown out of proportion?
I think that's going to be part of the fight. I mean, what she said she heard, some people are probably going to argue whether that was completely accurate. Because, again, George is talking almost simultaneously. Well, he is talking simultaneously at one point. When he is on the phone with 911, Dee Dee is on the phone with Trayvon. So when George says, oh, he just took off running, Dee Dee is already confirmed. He ran.
Right.
So George is that's confirmed that part of what George said was accurate and true. But he didn't make that up.
Right.
So, again, a lot of this is going to come down to what we know as time stamp, what we know, live time, so to speak. And here again is what I find interesting, and I have been boots on the ground for you. I've walked it myself.
Mm-hmm.
From 7-Eleven to Trayvon's house, 15-minute walk.
Okay.
15 minutes. If he leaves 7-Eleven at 6:30, which we know he did, Trisha, he should have been home at 6:45.
At
safe.
The latest, right. Right.
He and George wouldn't have seen each other.
Correct.
If he stopped to have a cigarette, then he should have been home still before George saw him. But George calls 911 at 7:09. What was he doing for 25 extra minutes?
Where was he? What was he doing? And that's important. That's incredibly
important. Because it goes to what George is saying. He's standing in the rain in a person's yard. He's standing in Frank Taffy's yard. George knows Frank. George knows Trayvon doesn't live there. George knows that house has been broken into. What George says. Frank Taffy says George is a good neighbor. So George pulls up to the clubhouse and calls 911. He's on 911 for 4 minutes and 7 seconds approximately.
Mm-hmm.
In 4 minutes from the clubhouse, you can easily, again, get to Trayvon's house. Again, he doesn't go home. I don't know why. But I know, we all know, from the 911 call that Trayvon has now seen George.
Okay.
From what Dee Dee says, he doesn't know why George is staring at him.
Mm-hmm. Right.
George doesn't know why Trayvon's standing in the rain.
Mm-hmm.
So now is where the perfect storm starts to build. One gets a little scared, one gets a little scared.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't trust each other now. Well, then Trayvon starts to walk. He walks past George's truck. He goes in between the two, you know, condominium
condos
units.
Mm-hmm. Is he heading home at this point? Where is he heading? Do we know?
Yes, he is heading toward the direction where he lives.
Okay, so he is starting.
For whatever reason, when he gets to the corner, he takes off running.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when George is like, he's running. And that's when he says, these assholes always get away. And then he keeps saying, I don't know where this kid's at. Now, that's key to me, too. Because he claimed, I don't know how old he is, and he apologized to the parents and said, I had no idea he was 17. You called him a kid. When 911 asked you how old he was, he says late teens.
So he did
know. Absolutely, he did. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Or he assumed. Either way, he was fairly accurate in that he was young. So even though Trayvon was tall and he had the hoodie on, George still knew he was young.
Mm-hmm.
So the way the place is set up, and when you hear people, and George on the 911 refers to the front and the back gate, that's a misconception.
Okay.
The back gate is actually a side gate.
Side gate, okay.
So the front gate would be 12 o'clock. The side gate is going to be more like 4 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so it's not actually in the back of the complex. It's on the side of the complex.
Mm-hmm.
So George assumes Trayvon's running that way to get out of the complex.
Okay.
Okay, because he says he's headed toward the back gate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then here's the other thing that kind of bothers you once you're walking the scene. George's 911 call ends at 7:14. So he's on 911 for a long time. I mean, 4 minutes?
That's a long time.
It is a long time. And again, from the clubhouse, Trayvon could have been home 3 different ways in 4 minutes. It's a long time. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
There's a two-minute period of time, and then the first 911 call comes in about 7:15, and you can already hear the yelling in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if there's already yelling for help, then you back it up even 40 seconds and back it up a minute. There's 2 minutes between when George stops the 911 call and the next call for help comes in.
Okay.
That 2 minutes is the most critical period of time. Because that's what we don't know. Who engaged to. Because in 2 minutes from where he was walking, conceivably, George should have been back and inside his truck. Why wasn't he?
Why wasn't he? Mm-hmm.
So was he trying to get back to his truck, and that's when he and Trayvon had a confrontation? And then that lasted over a minute? Was the confrontation quick? Was the confrontation an ambush? See, those are the things we don't know.
We don't know, and that's what the jury is going to have to sort out. We're talking to Cheryl McCollum about the George Zimmerman case that's coming up for trial here very, very shortly. And, Cheryl, this case is truly a mystery, but unfortunately it's a mystery that is going to be bogged down by all kinds of things that affect our judgment, and maybe will affect the jury's judgment. We don't know. Can I get back to the 911 call, okay, if I could? It really bothered me that George said that, and I argued with everybody that that's exactly what he was saying. This is how out of the loop I am. This is the first I heard that it was added. Was it added by the NBC guys? Who added it?
I'm not sure which news organization added it, but it was a media person.
They added the word? How did they get the – I mean, did they put two words together?
They just took the 911 call and then dubbed it in there and then taped over it and then played it as though it was real.
So they – but how did they get his voice saying the word coon?
Well, it's like somebody's whispering.
Right.
Like it's not so they just, in a sentence. All of a sudden you hear, coon.
Yeah, you know, I mean, he said effing coon. Yeah.
Yeah, they just put it
in. And so
there.
They made that up and put it in. That infuriates me. That
infuriates me too, but you got to remember, this is the same profession that made O.J. Simpson's skin darker. This is the same profession that, you know, sometimes portrays people the way they want. I mean, they'll take a, you know, a still picture when somebody just looks insane, and that's the picture that, you know,
they put out there. So they look crazy. Whoever did that obviously should be fired and sued. That is shameful. Because let me tell you, I didn't know that was fake. And I have, since the beginning, when I heard that, I'm like, you guys, you just can't get around the fact that's exactly what he said. I don't care what you say. And now tonight I'm hearing somebody, oh, God, that makes me mad. How dare they?
And here's the thing. The reality is, this is a media bias situation from Jump Street. You had people marching before they had any evidence at all, before they knew what was happening. You're going to have people that don't care what the facts are.
Exactly.
Right? And, you know, I teach at a predominantly black college, and I tell my students all the time, it is tragic, and it was senseless, and it was so preventable. With that aside, I do not understand why Trayvon Martin's life is more important than the 947 young men that have died in Chicago. And you don't know any of them by name. You're not marching. You're not mad. You're not trying to stop it. I mean, what was it, 6 more young men have died over the weekend? Where's the outrage for that?
Absolutely.
You're giving George Zimmerman way too much power.
Mm-hmm.
Way too much power. White people kill black people 3% of the time. White people are not your problem. 97% of the time, it is black on black during homicide.
Mm-hmm. And we never hear about it. Why don't we hear about it?
That's what I'm
saying. Why don't we hear about it?
You're marching about the wrong thing. You're making something racial that very well may not be. He might have pegged this guy wrong, but it might not have been racially motivated.
I agree.
He called 911 over dogs. He called 911 over kids playing in the pool too loud. He called about a woman sitting in the car yelling at people. He called about somebody weaving in and out of traffic. I mean, let's face it. He used 911 like a butler.
He did.
I don't know what his deal is, but when I was there, my son even pointed out to me, because they walked with me. I take my children sometimes. And,
good.
It is good. And he said,
it
Mom,
is.
Look at the sign. It says, Neighborhood Watch, we will call for all suspicious activity. He said, it says it on the sign. So if George took that literally, and I thought, hey, that's pretty good for a 12-year-old, you know, young man to figure that out. But, you know, if George took that sign literally, I am going to call for anything suspicious. And that neighborhood association voted in it, you know, unanimously. This might have been something that meant a lot to George.
Yes. It did. He took it very seriously.
Oh, he called.
Exactly.
I mean, he called two dozen times in the weeks leading up to the shooting. You know, now one other thing I learned when I was watching George's video that he made for law enforcement. Where he was showing them exactly what happened and when. I was under the impression that he was actually patrolling this night as a neighborhood watch.
Well, that's what I thought.
Well, that's not the case.
Oh, really?
Out of George's own mouth, he tells the detective, yep, I was headed to the store when I spotted him. Okay, let's back up a second.
Okay.
He's going to the store for what? Okay, it's 7, so maybe dessert after dinner, or maybe you eat a late dinner, whatever, right?
Cigarettes, milk, beer, whatever,
Yeah, you're taking a Tech 9 to the grocery store?
Yeah, that is a little harsh. That's a little harsh.
I get it. I'm a Second Amendment person. I get it. Trust me, I get it. I'm a First Amendment person, okay?
Okay.
You're going to the grocery store at 7 o'clock at night, but you strap on your weapon.
That, to me, says somebody that just likes to carry a gun.
Right. You've got this thing going, or you are a chicken. One or the other.
I think he has a chicken.
It's going to happen.
Right.
You know
you're right. If you're looking
for
it.
You can't run to the store for beer and spaghetti.
mm-hmm.
without a weapon, or you have, like you said, you have to show somebody, hey, I'm the guy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to be like the Wild West, and I'm going to put it right here on my hip so everybody can see it.
Everybody can see I'm carrying, yeah.
Yeah.
So, exactly. And
again,
that's
going to be something for the jury
to decide.
Mm-hmm.
I just, you know, honestly, my whole thought process has changed hearing about that 911 call that somebody put in the word coon.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you brought that up. Where can we find this? Is it like, has it been reported in mainstream media? How did I miss this?
If you type in, I don't know what they call it, the word was dubbed in, or if you
mm-hmm.
just type in Zimmerman 911 coon
dubbed
or something, it'll come
right.
up.
Okay, because I need to do that, because that just upsets me.
Say asshole.
Oh, that's okay. You know what?
These
yeah.
assholes. I know, but it depends on what he means by these. These
well,
black
that's true.
Assholes,
these
young
yeah.
assholes, these what assholes.
I would say...
I mean, it's going to be relevant, I believe.
It will be. And if I had to pick something, I would say he'd say these assholes, criminals. You know, these assholes
right.
always get away
and
with it.
Right, that's why I'm saying George is going to have to make, in some, the best he can, make that clear. Because, again, when I was in that neighborhood, it is a very diverse neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like he's in a secluded area. And, again, let's be honest about it being, quote, gated. I mean, it took less than 20 seconds to get in there. Nobody
mm-hmm.
said a word to me. So it wasn't like I'm trying to get into some country club estate. It's just not going to happen.
Right.
It was real easy. So
let me ask you something.
I was kind of even surprised a little bit.
By how easy it was?
No, the diversity.
Oh, the diversity.
Because, again, the media leads you to think he's in this all-white neighborhood. It's not true
mm-hmm.
at all. Not at all.
Got it. Okay, so let's understand something here. Are they going to use the stand your ground defense or have they decided they're not going to, and that's why we didn't have a hearing earlier? What's going on with that?
I think he doesn't want to be up to just one judge. He wants to wait. If they
mm-hmm.
went ahead and used the stand your ground hearing, they would have to show all their cards now. This is
oh,
how they're
okay.
going to put up the defense. This is what they're going to say. So then they would be really ready for them at trial. They're
mm-hmm.
not sure. What are they going to say? So that's going to be part of, they just wanted to hold off. There's no rush.
Okay, got it. So what George Zimmerman needs to do is to convince the jury. Does he need to convince the jury that Trayvon attacked him and that his life
mm-hmm.
was in danger? Okay,
mm-hmm.
let me ask you about the stand your ground law. Let's say,
mm-hmm.
for argument's sake, that Trayvon did attack George Zimmerman.
Mm-hmm.
What if George Zimmerman is the one that made Trayvon afraid for his life, so he felt like he had to do something? Then how does the stand your ground law work then?
Right. They're going to put this to the jury in this way. At what point, even if you start a fight, let's say you and I go to a bar, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you and I take on a couple of people, and we start it. We throw the first punch, and all of a sudden they pull out knives. We just have to die because we started it?
Mm-hmm.
Because
is that how they're
going to... the case,
right.
Think about what's fixing to happen in this country. You're telling me I can't shoot somebody that breaks in my house if they
mm-hmm.
decide they want to leave. If they're no longer
right.
a threat, I just get to let them leave.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that means criminals are going to have the upper hand.
They can just say, I decided to stop and he shot me anyway, or he attacked me anyway.
Right.
I see what you're saying. Okay.
Okay, so it's going to be the makeup of the jury, and I don't mean race. I mean everything, race, gender,
mm-hmm.
religion, their past experiences, what's in their heart is going to
mm-hmm.
make the biggest difference in this case. Again, we have one eyewitness that says George was on the bottom when he came out of his house and he went back in and called 911.
Mm-hmm.
That still doesn't tell us who started it. It still doesn't tell us why George wasn't at his truck in 2 minutes. It still doesn't tell us why Trayvon didn't go home.
Right.
So there's still a lot of unanswered questions from 6:30 to 6:45, what were you doing? From 6:30 to 7:09, what were you doing? And you can't just say it doesn't matter. Of course it matters. Because George says the guy looks suspicious. The guy looks
mm-hmm.
like he's on drugs or something. Well, guess what? There's THC in his system.
I was going to say, so I'm pretty much everybody
ignore,
in Florida.
Right, but I'm saying you can't ignore the fact he was on drugs.
Exactly.
And everybody wants to talk about he had Arizona iced tea in the Skittles. Nobody wants to mention the fact that he had a lighter. For what? We all know for what, because there wasn't a pack of cigarettes with him.
No.
So chances
so
are he was smoking marijuana. Okay, where'd
exactly.
he get it? And then, you know, they're not going to want to call his poor daddy to the stand.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't report your child missing until the next day.
Yeah, that's not good.
Why not? Sir?
Oh, are you used to him being gone all night? I mean, what?
Right.
Yeah, why didn't you?
He hadn't been here but a couple of days, and
mm-hmm.
he's only 17. And, you know, see, if the daddy gets on the stand and they start this line of questioning, then he may say, well, why was he here during the school year? That's a valid question.
That is a valid question.
Well, see, they can't let that in, but it might slip in, see, because
mm-hmm.
they can't say that he was suspended. But if the daddy gets on the stand, he may have to say, well, yeah, he wasn't just here visiting on vacation. It was not spring break.
Right.
And the fact
oh, my
is,
gosh.
All potential jurors, they already know it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, so you know, you're out to dinner, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about your relationship with your neighbors for a minute. You get home, your son's not there, you either don't notice or don't think it's a big deal.
Right.
Okay?
Okay.
And you don't notice crime scene tape in your backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And not one neighbor comes over to tell you something bad has happened. Huh.
That's interesting.
Okay.
Why?
Right?
Why would that be?
Why would that be? If your fiancé's lived there for a period of time and everybody kind of knows you and you have a younger son, no one.
What's your theory?
Have ID?
Right.
Why doesn't he have ID on him?
That's a very good point. I don't know. Do you have any theories?
Well, most 16-year-old guys have a license. So most 17-year-old guys have a school ID and a driver's license. They can't wait to get a wallet.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So what are your theories? What are your theories?
Well, I mean, most people that don't carry an ID don't want to be ID'd by police.
Gotcha.
Okay, so
and why
we,
didn't they go?
You know,
why didn't they go tell Trayvon's family about the incident?
They didn't know who he was.
They didn't exactly. They didn't know
they
that
no
he
idea.
Was connected to them, right?
He wasn't from there, and that's why I'm telling mm-hmm. you that you know it's a diverse neighborhood. It's not like, well, there's only one black family; they live right there. It's not like that,
right? Right.
And nobody recognized him because he wasn't from there. He'd only been there a couple of days.
So in George
came outside said we don't know who he is.
In George Zimmerman's case, then he can say he truly was an outsider coming in, and that could lead to Trayvon acting suspicious. Now
it
we
could, but again, mm-hmm. I don't know all of my neighbors, you know, stepchildren or cousins. So you may see somebody in your neighborhood you've never seen before, but for George mm-hmm. to hear him tell it now. The fact that it was raining added to how bizarre this was.
Mm-hmm.
That he felt like in the rain, people should try to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just standing in this guy's yard, stared at his house.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I can't answer that. If George
I can't
is telling
either.
The truth, I don't know why he would do that. Well, then he goes up toward the pool house, and there's a little shed over the mailboxes. He stands
mm-hmm.
under that a minute. Now, that makes sense to me because it's raining. And he's
right.
on the phone. But then all of a sudden he starts walking toward George, changes his mind, goes down the walkway, and then starts to run. He should have just kept running, and he should have run
running.
All the way home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that, oh, my gosh, there are so many shoulda, woulda, coulda. I mean, it's
right.
This case is so
well, as a parent, it's heartbreaking. Cause
it is.
Should have been
oh, my
home.
Gosh, yes.
He should have.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
exactly.
And it's so
now,
tragic.
It's beyond tragic. And when you see Trayvon's mm-hmm. mom, it's your heart just breaks for her. And
oh my
obviously,
gosh. Yeah,
yeah, it just kills me. Obviously, we're talking with Cheryl McCollum about the George Zimmerman trial coming up. George Zimmerman is charged with killing 17-year-old Trayvon Martin. It is going to be a very ugly trial. It is going to involve racial elements. They're going to be the word racism will be thrown around a lot, and obviously race is going to play an issue in this case. And mm-hmm. since it is, where he's being tried, if I understand, it is a racially mixed area. So a jury of his peers will be racially mixed. What will, let's put on your defense attorney cap and then your prosecuting attorney cap. What will the prosecuting side look for in jurors for the George Zimmerman trial?
God, that's an excellent question. And I want to caveat, you know, by letting everybody know I'm not an attorney. However, they're going to have to be really careful because you might automatically think, oh, you know, I want young black men.
Mm-hmm.
They may be the hardest on Trayvon.
Really?
They may.
Mm-hmm.
So
you don't know, you're right.
You have to be real careful because what people tend to do is, well, I wouldn't wear a hoodie and stand in the rain in the dark in front of somebody's front yard.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, and it might not be that he was necessarily standing in a front yard. It could have been that he stopped to redial the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where those real time stamps are going to come into place because I know he was calling Dee Dee a couple of times, but the
mm-hmm.
phone kept dropping off, and then she would call him back. Well, the phone's in his pocket, and the earpiece is clipped kind of to the hoodie, you know, where he can talk.
Yes.
So it could be that that's what he's stopping to do because it's raining. So it might have made him look suspicious. And that's why I'm telling you, it's almost the perfect storm. He had every right to be there. He had
mm-hmm.
every right to stand there. George has every right to say, hey, can I help you? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So it's kind of this situation where both people are completely within their legal right and
mm-hmm.
something goes tragically wrong. And so
right.
that's why I'm saying this case, if they would just go by the facts, and again, I keep saying this because I haven't had anybody clear this up for me. I would love to hear somebody tell me the trajectory. The path of that bullet means more to me than almost anything else.
And why is that?
Because it'll show who was on the ground, who was on top. It'll show how far they were apart. If they were
mm-hmm.
12 inches apart, 6 inches apart, 3 inches apart, if it's, you know, going upward, then George was on the bottom. If it's going down, George was on top. And
mm-hmm.
that'll prove whether or not he's telling the truth right there.
Don't you think that could be the Perry Mason moment? I mean, if it is that clear, and obviously they're going,
Perry
the
Mason.
Defense is going to bring in their... you know, their people. But if it is something
sure.
that's pretty obvious, isn't that going to kind of be a Perry Mason moment? Like, aha, see? The bullet trajectory. And why haven't they released that? I would think that would be something that
they
would be out there.
I don't know. They released everything else. They released that they did the toxicology on, you know, Trayvon.
Mm-hmm.
They released that, you know, George has had a past run-in with the police with domestic violence and speeding.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've released so much. They released all these Facebook photographs of Trayvon.
Mm-hmm.
They released all the text message stuff. And then, of course, they said, but this can't get in. But every potential juror can go look at it right now if they want.
Well, yes.
It was,
I mean,
all
that's
a stunt.
Just...
And that's why I'm telling you, the way a 17-year-old decides to portray himself on Facebook, I mean, let's face it. If you've ever been on Facebook or Instagram or any of that, they sometimes represent themselves not exactly accurate.
Yes,
and
you can lie. Yes, you can.
Sure, and you can do things. Like, I think there's one where he's holding money and, you know, flipping people off. I mean, he was not
mm-hmm.
some big-time drug dealer. Come on.
No. He looked to me like a 17-year-old kid, and that's what they do, you know?
Right. So, you know, the tattoos, you know, those, again, those are mentioned in the autopsy report. The
mm-hmm.
THC is mentioned in the autopsy report, so... You know, I don't know how much relevance people are going to put on anything. Again, it just is absolutely going to depend how you talk to. Again,
mm-hmm.
both sides may want parents. Both sides may want, you know, defense are going to want some gun owners probably. But again,
mm-hmm.
you got to be real careful because if you get that gun owner that says, there's no way I'm taking a Tech 9 to Publix, sorry.
Right.
Then it's going to hurt George. And if you get, you know, a college student that says, yeah, there's no way I'm standing in the rain in the hoodie in somebody's front yard. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
You know
gonna
how that
Trayvon.
Looks. We all know how that looks, right? So you have to be real careful. So I think there's going to be some jury experts that are going to make a lot of money on this case.
Oh, yeah. There's some lawyers going to make money. All kinds of people are going to make money on this. Cheryl, yep. We have a couple of questions from the chat room, and let me just get to those right now. Is the prosecutor in this case going to get in trouble for withholding the gun and MJ photos from the defense? This is from our friend Ranch Hand in the chat room. Do you know if he's going to get in trouble for that?
I mean, the trial hasn't started. You've got plenty of time. Everybody knew the deal here. And I think right now it's just, like I said before, it's ugly. And everybody wants to make a name for themselves, and that's what they're doing.
And that is the truth. Everybody is trying to make a name for themselves.
For the defense attorneys, it's a three-week commercial. For the prosecution, it's a way for people to know them by name.
Mm-hmm.
And this may be their last shot at, hey, I know who that person is, you know.
At getting a big enough case that they have name recognition.
I'm just going to tell you the truth. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And what about televised? Is it going to be televised? I believe it is, isn't it? It's Florida.
Yeah, the last I heard, yeah. Now, they're going to, you know, do the gag order probably where they can't speak afterwards, but we're not going to need them to. We're going to have all the Nancy Grace folks and,
mm-hmm.
you know, other pundits that are going to come on and break it down for us every day.
Yeah,
we're not
yes.
going to need the lawyer version.
No, we're going to have plenty of people. Cheryl, we're almost out of time. Let's talk about your Cold Case Investigative Research Institute. Tell us a little bit about that. I always love hearing about it because it's just such a wonderful group of people. Give us kind of the rundown on what's going on with you these days at the Institute.
Well, we've got about 12 colleges that are involved, and we just added a college, Argosy, and they've got some master's students that are getting a master's degree in forensic psychology. So
mm-hmm.
they're a huge addition that I just can't say enough about their intellect and about their, you know, the work they're going to be able to do for us, which will just be tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
They're helping us with the Drew Peterson case because, again, we're not done with that. He was found guilty
what are you doing?
Of killing Kathleen Savio. Well, we're trying to locate Stacy.
Mm-hmm.
So they're helping us with, you know, breaking down exactly what's going on with Drew. And I think they're going to be, again, such a piece of that puzzle that we couldn't get anywhere else. I can't say enough about Argosy.
Oh, that's
and so,
wonderful.
You know, what the students do, each college has its own area of expertise. And we work independently. We don't talk to each other and compare notes throughout the year. But when we're done, we sit down in a room and kind of hash it out. And hopefully each college kind of points to the same person.
Mm-hmm.
And once we know that, yeah, we're kind of on the right track here, then we do a final report that goes to law enforcement. And hopefully that, you know, will help them out. We'll give them, you know, kind of advice about what we think should happen, whether something should be retested or somebody should be put on, you know, a polygraph, and then what types of questions should be asked, things like that.
Fantastic. So when you present this to law enforcement, do they know that you're working on it beforehand, or it just kind of surprise them with all this work? Okay, and how has law enforcement been, have they been receptive to you kind of just stepping in?
Because
some, really, have you ever run into somebody in law enforcement saying, hey, we don't need your help?
Never. Now, I've had people kind of in the beginning not real sure, like, what we're going to be able to do. But by the time we're finished, they have all been very grateful. But we have, for the most part, had nothing but just gracious and, you know, very respectful folks saying, hey, anything y'all can do, we appreciate it. And
mm-hmm.
we can't always do something. But, for example, Sean Beatty out of Oklahoma, there were three suspects, and we thought one didn't need to be a suspect. And so
mm-hmm.
we brought this person to Alabama and did a polygraph ourselves that we were able to successfully rule him out. So we did that for them.
Wow.
You know, our
That's
expense,
good.
Our expert from the FBI, yeah. So we try to do things that will help them, but like OSBI has been great, Metro in D.C. was great, Boston's been great. I mean, you know, Rome, Georgia has been
mm-hmm.
phenomenal. And most people say, whatever we can do, if you want to come, you know, here's the case file. Like the Georgia Bureau of Investigation is helping us out so much with Kirsten Davis. And again, they want it solved. So if I'm telling them, I've got 800 students ready to go to
mm-hmm.
work, And so if they all work 10 hours, you understand? I mean, that's a lot of time. And they'll work more than that, a whole lot more than that.
Wow. But that is amazing.
I mean, the math gets just astonishing that what, you know, what they'll put into it. And, you know, the students don't get any credit. They don't get a grade. It's all volunteer. And they donate as much time as they can and feel like they want to.
That is so wonderful that you have a group like that. So how many people, now you say you work with other colleges, so you have satellite people all over, but can you give us a figure of how many people work with you?
Well, we've got about 800 students, and I can call in anywhere between, you know, 100 and 200 experts if I need them. So we've got psychics and bloodstain experts and people that are experts in tattoos and knot tying and broken glass and ballistics and crime analysis and crime mapping and suspectology and victimology. It depends on what we need. That's who we bring in. And folks that you know, like Holly Hughes has been a good friend to us, and Alex Manning. We just got some folks that, I mean, you can Google them. I mean, they're nationally recognized people. Betsy Ramsey, Leslie Bailey, Trip Mitchell, Vince Velasquez. I mean, some really remarkable people that come in. And again, the experts aren't paid either. So Reese Christian, for example, a well-known psychic, Chip Coffey. Chip Coffey had psychic kids on TV. He would come and help us out. Nobody's ever gotten a dime. I mean, I make a point. They don't even get a coffee mug. They don't get a college sweatshirt. There's going to be no question. There was no gratuity anywhere.
Just
because it's the right thing to do.
Right.
And,
well,
you know,
and
for the
good.
Families. Sure. I don't get paid either. I have a real job, you know, like most people. I have more than one. So it's not about money, and I don't want money. I've had people offer before, but, you know, money sometimes messes things up. So we just want to keep doing it because it's the right thing to do.
That is the Cheryl McCollum that I know and love. Your heart is pure, my dear, and you do so much amazing work. So if somebody wants to get involved, they have to find a college that is connected with you. Is that correct?
No,
okay.
If
tell us how that works.
If somebody wants to volunteer, they can absolutely volunteer. Like, for example, I've got a lady in Seattle that was one of the decoy detectives. She was a decoy during a particular serial killer up there, Ted Bundy. And so she's got a ton of knowledge and expertise. So I will send her a case file. And if students have particular questions about should we use a decoy here or should we – you know, work with Vice on this or send some people into the prison that are not an inmate, that kind of thing. She's the type of person that would be able to walk them through that to say yes or no, and this is why it might blow up in your face or this might be the reason it's outstanding. I've even used experts that are former members of the Klan. We had a hate crime in Georgia that everybody was convinced that the Klan did it. So, you know, I've never joined the Klan, so I felt like we needed somebody that understood how they operated. So there's nobody better, right?
Oh, my gosh. And, you got ex-Klan members to do that? Really?
Yes. And let me tell you, he's one of the best speakers I have ever heard in my life. His name is Johnny Lee Cleary, and he came down and met with the students. He said, no, I'm not going to come to the college because he had such massive, you know, death threats and everything. And so
I can imagine.
At a location that we agreed on. And he said that he felt better if there was maybe only a handful of students and experts, so it was limited to 10. So we went out and met with him, and I had Dr. Cindy Fascitelli with me. She's a psychopathologist, you know, for like a profiler. And I had Virginia Shepherd, who is a civil rights attorney. I mean, I had some awesome experts, as well as the students. And one of my students, LaShawn Bates, LaShawn was like, Matt, because the students called me Matt. She said, what do you mean by X? Klansman. That made me laugh. And I said, well, LaShawn, I don't know. I said, I've got a friend who, you know, still sleeps with her ex-husband. So I guess it depends on what X means to you. I said, but, you know, he agreed to meet with us. But he tells this story, and I don't know how much time we've got left, but you should have him on. Your audience would
love to have him on.
But
let's hook up.
There was a Reverend Watts, and I'm not going to tell you any of the story. But he and Reverend Watts kind of had this dueling relationship going on. And it's a story you honestly need to hear. It will make you a better person hearing it.
Oh, then you know what? I want to get him on next week. Let's do it. We'll connect up. I want to hear about this because anything
yeah,
to help.
Awesome.
That would be fantastic. Cheryl, how can people get in contact you if they want to help with any of the cold cases?
Yeah, they can get me on Facebook. If they contact you, you know, you can...
I can pass it along.
If somebody you know, sure, you can absolutely do it. Or they can get me at Cheryl Mack, S-H-E-R-Y-L-M-A-C,
mm-hmm.
at MSN. Because a lot of people tend to send it to the cold case tips, but I don't actually funnel that. The students do, so I sometimes get it, sometimes don't. But Cheryl Mack at MSN. And,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I would love the help. And, again, we'll just send you the case file and... Whatever you see, what you don't, and I love using civilians.
Mm-hmm.
With Susan Smith, I'll tell you, do I have 20 seconds?
Absolutely.
Okay, with Susan Smith in Union, South Carolina, we were asked to go up and help if we could.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I did not have children, but my four sisters did. And my sisters were elementary school teachers, two of them, and two of them
mm-hmm.
were flight attendants. So not the people that you would... is tough and you know what I mean?
Right, yes, exactly.
All four, independently of each other, told me if somebody put a gun to my head with my children in that car, I wouldn't get out of the car.
Absolutely right. You couldn't.
Change that case for me before I got up there. Because in that moment that my sister Shelley, she's the first one that said it, I mean,
mm-hmm.
she's a flight attendant. You know, I mean, I'm not, but I mean, this was, you know, before 9/11. I mean, she wasn't
mm-hmm.
even cognizant of something happening bad. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
And, I mean, her job was just exotic and fascinating and fun, and she was all international. I mean, she just had the time of her life. So
mm-hmm.
for her to say that to me, I'm like, oh, my Lord, this woman hurt those children.
Yes,
I mean, I
for
knew
her,
it in that moment. Mm-hmm.
In that moment, when that's true, mm-hmm. You talk to anybody, now you know, being a parent, that you would have
right.
to kill you to get me too. They'd have to kill me to
oh,
get me
well,
out of the car.
Yeah,
and
I
that,
don't even think
yeah.
my blood pressure would change. I'd be like, whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
It's fine.
Yeah. You're just going to have to kill me. End of story. Cheryl McClellan, it's always a delight, and I'll be in touch with you. I'd love to have that gentleman on my show next week. It sounds absolutely fascinating. And we're going to be talking more about the George Zimmerman case as it's coming up really soon. So we'll be talking to you a lot, Cheryl. Cheryl, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Tricia. And I'll be live from there. So we'll definitely do a show.
Oh, sounds great. Thanks, Cheryl. Thank you.
All right,
take care,
you
my dear. Bye-bye. Cheryl McCollum, she is the director of the Cold Case Research Institute and a wonderful friend to Tricia's True Crime Radio and to the members of Web Sleuths as well. We're going to switch topics now, and joining us is Elaine Redwine. Elaine has a sad story, but she's holding strong and is still looking for her son Dylan. 14 years old, he went missing from his father's home right around Thanksgiving. And since then, Elaine has been doing what she can to try and find 14-year-old Dylan Redwine. Elaine, welcome to Tricia's True Crime Radio.
Thank you, Tricia.
Tell us can you tell us anything new with the case? Is there anything that you can give us that we can offer some hope, perhaps?
There's been nothing new within the investigation as far as finding Dylan. We just continue to search and exhaust all those resources and until we can, you know, cover any little piece, because ruling anything out means that he's not there, because, you know, if he's not there, then we can begin looking other places.
Exactly. And that's what Mark Class of Class Kids, when they do searches, we tell the searchers when we're training them, I don't feel bad that you didn't find anything, because what that means is now the police don't have to waste time looking here. So you've helped. You're helping narrow down the scope. Yeah, I'm unfortunately you have, and as Mark Class said, this is a very exclusive club and one nobody wants to be in when you have a missing child. Elaine, are there any searches planned coming up, any things that we could perhaps publicize for you to help get searchers out there?
We do have some searches planned. We're trying to get the specifics now. You know, we go up quite often as a family and mm-hmm. you know, hit the trails and the mountains and the lakes and whatever, you know, whatever at that point is the point of interest. So we don't have anything specific yet. We are working on a massive search that will happen in mid-June, but I just don't have the details yet for that.
Okay. And you're selling T-shirts to help fund these searches, correct?
Well, the T-shirts were really something that my niece did. She won a contest mm-hmm. Through a local T-shirt company, and she actually created the Team Dylan logo. And so we're not necessarily selling the T-shirts. We're, mm-hmm. you know, those people who are close and dear to the searches for Dylan are given one of those T-shirts. You know,
that's very nice.
That's part of Team Dylan.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That helps people get a kind of a team feeling, team spirit going.
Exactly. It keeps Dylan's name out there when they wear that shirt.
Absolutely. It keeps everybody will look at the T-shirt and remember Dylan and keep their eyes out for him. And that is what is important. Elaine, I want to talk to you about a few things. I did talk to your ex-husband, Mark Redwine, for quite a while. And he might even be a guest on this show sometime soon. And there's just a couple of things that I explained to you off the air, it's very important for me and for the listeners to get the misconceptions cleared up, because things have been said about you, things have been said about Mark, and it's important for Dylan to get these misconceptions cleared up so nobody even bothers with it anymore, because it bogs down an investigation. It creates all kinds of cogs in the wheel, and that's why I want to talk to you about this, and that's the only reason why, is to get it cleared up and we can just move on. Now, I understand you have a mediation date set for this Wednesday. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And Mark Redwine set it up, and you're going to sit down with a professional mediator and hopefully be able to come together. Is that how you understand it?
Well, you know, I've never been through formal mediation before, but that's my hope. And bottom line is, you know, I've never not wanted to talk to Mark. I've reached out to him often. And mm-hmm. if this is what it takes for us to sit down and talk to each other and answer questions, then, if this is the forum we have to do it in, so be it.
Okay. But you want to do that. You want to sit down with him and talk,
yes.
Correct?
I always, okay. I have, since the day Dylan went missing.
Mm-hmm. And, now, you said that he blocked your phone, or that you, yeah, he blocked his phone so you couldn't get to him, right?
Right.
Okay. Could
yeah,
you?
I cannot text him or call him, and neither can his son, Corey.
Can you email him?
I have emailed him, yes.
And it doesn't, he responds or not, or?
You know, I think Mark and I view things differently. You know, I've mm-hmm. I've made my statements very clear on how I feel about the fact that he was the last one to see Dylan, and I think he has more answers. And so I'm very upfront with Mark in asking mm-hmm. him questions about, you know, where does he think we should look for Dylan? He criticizes all of our search plans, but yet has no idea. He criticizes law enforcement when Dylan first went missing because they didn't issue an Amber Alert. But the reason that they didn't issue an Amber Alert is because Mark told them that he went fishing. He went to his friend's house. Mark never indicated there was an abduction, which is why there mm-hmm. was no Amber Alert. So much
right.
of what has happened and what has transpired on law enforcement side and my side is because of Mark's words and his actions.
Mm-hmm. And so he's trying now, isn't he, to see if they can get, I mean, it's late, obviously, but maybe get an Amber Alert out there so it'll go all over the U.S. I think he's trying to do something like that now. But now, there's also a misconception, and this is something that I think is very important. Since Mark was the last one to see him alive, he obviously is the one that people suspect and want to question. And he texted you and said, have you seen Dylan? And you're the one that reported Dylan missing to the sheriff, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Mark also said that he, well, also reported Dylan missing, but it was to the marshal's office. And the marshals and the sheriff don't connect. Is that your understanding? Have you ever heard that before?
No, and you know what? Dylan was missing at that point for many hours. So excuses are something I'm not going to buy. I'm sorry. I went to who I had to go to the minute I found out that Mark had not heard from Dylan for hours.
Oh, I don't think anybody's. No, I do the same thing.
I didn't necessarily call.
Absolutely.
But no, it was me. It was me who reported Dylan missing. And I don't know if Mark just didn't go through the proper channels or what. And quite honestly, I find that irrelevant because Mark should have reported Dylan missing hours before he did.
Okay, but if he went to the marshals, I would think that, I mean, I don't know if he did or not. That's what he is telling me, that he went to the marshals and that he would like that misconception cleared up. That he did report Dylan missing.
Well, he may have gone to the marshal's office, but you know, they have it on record that I was the one making the report. So
okay.
I don't know how to answer his question. I'm sorry it didn't go to the top that it needed to go to. I made sure for my son that it did.
And Elaine, there's nobody out there that would question that at all. You called the sheriff. That's what you had to do. I understand that totally. You're really, really upset, I can tell, and I don't want to upset you. Why are you so upset?
Well, because Dylan is missing still.
I know. I'm not saying that. I mean,
and I have to catch my breath. I know Dylan. I know he would not have stopped using his cell phone at 9:30 on Sunday night. I know he would have texted me if anything were awry or anything were wrong. And I just don't feel he had the opportunity to do that because of interference. And I believe in my heart, as I have from the beginning, and it's a mother's intuition, you know, and people can gawk at that all they want, but I know Dylan. I've raised him from the, you know, from the baby stage, and I know him. And I know that something went wrong, and he was not able to access his cell phone. And I believe Mark knows way more than he is letting anybody know.
And here's a question that I need cleared up. Was Dylan's cell phone left at Mark's, or is it missing?
Well, Mark has told the police and myself that the cell phone is not at his house.
Okay, so it's wherever it is. It's not at his house.
He said he took his cell phone with him when he was gone.
Okay.
And his charger.
Okay, so there's no charger.
His cell phone charger.
Mm-hmm.
His iPod charger that had also had the capability of texting. Everything Dylan brought from my house to Mark's is missing.
Except for the clothing? Isn't the clothing there?
No, the clothing is not. Well, Mark told the police and myself that his clothing was gone as well.
Okay, so all of the according to what you know, and please, and this is what I want to say. Of course, you're still upset because Dylan's missing. It breaks my heart to hear you. And the last thing I want to do is upset you while we talk about this. But Elaine, I think it's really important that we find out who is saying what about whom as it relates to Dylan. Because,
I agree. Just be patient with my emotions.
Oh, no. You know what? Please, the fact that you're able to, you know, put one foot in front of the other, that to me is amazing. So, no, absolutely. I just want you to know that's not my intention at all. And it's not my intention to upset Mark either. I just want to find out the truth here. Okay, so you're saying that Mark told you that everything Dylan brought is missing.
Mark told myself as well as the police that everything Dylan that was in Dylan's backpack is not at Mark's house.
Mm-hmm. And can you hold on just one second? I'm having a little bit of difficulty, okay? So hold on one second. I just need to click on something here and hopefully it'll help. Hold on. Uh, Okay, I think this will do it. Anyway, so, but then did Mark assume that he went, the story is that he thought Mark went fishing, or that he thought Dylan went fishing, correct?
That's what he, well, he just says that Dylan's fishing pole was gone.
Okay. Now, in the affidavits that were released, it said they found two iPods. And maybe you don't know. Maybe you don't know what's going on, but...
I do.
Okay. Tell us.
Well, the iPods that they found was not... One of them was not Dylan's iPod Touch, which is the mm-hmm. one that he used all the time. The other three iPods that were there were basically my iPods that, you know, may have been there from an earlier time that Dylan was there. He always used my iPods or his brother's iPods or his brother's girlfriend's iPods.
Mm-hmm.
But those were not, none of those were his iPod Touch.
Okay, and that's what's missing. Excuse me, it was in the search warrant, not the affidavit. The search warrant. And so Dylan took an iPod Touch with him, and what they found was not the iPod Touch. Is that what we're saying?
Yes, that's what I'm
okay.
saying, yes.
Okay, so when you say that Mark told you that his clothes and everything was missing, did he verbally tell you? Did he put it in an email? How did he tell you this?
He put it in a text. And
in a text.
Because I said, why would Dylan leave with his backpack if he was just going fishing? Why would all of his clothes, his iPod, his cell phone charger, everything, why would he take that fishing?
Mm-hmm. And what was the response?
In a text. He doesn't know.
Okay. So, and this is when you were able to text. And you're still able to communicate through email, correct?
Well, I mean, you know, I send emails with
okay.
questions, and I don't get anywhere.
Okay, but you...
So,
but,
you know,
but
communication
there
is... Well, I mean, communication with words, but that's not necessarily communication. People can speak and not communicate a thing.
Mm-hmm. So hopefully this mediation will be, you know, something that will help that. If you want to, I can tell you what Mark told me that maybe will help you and Mark get along a little better. Would you like that?
Okay.
Okay. He said one of the reasons why he blocked your phone was because you would call and just be accusatory and upset, and he couldn't talk to you. And he wanted to talk to you. He wanted to sit down and talk to you, but you would just start accusing him and yelling at him. And basically is what he said. I'm passing that along to you, and maybe you two can sit down and reach a meeting of the minds, you know, of that. I understand why you're upset. I understand you think why you think.
You know, Mark, from the very beginning, has never taken any responsibility over losing Dylan, ever. Mm-hmm. He never said, I'm sorry. He's never said, you know, he's never, you know, said to me, you know, I should have changed things. I should have done things differently. He's never tried to call me, first of all, ever. Has he tried to call me? All of his communication is through emails and texts, but he never takes responsibility. He just blames everybody else, and it's nobody else's fault that Dylan is missing, in my opinion. Because if Mark really thought that Dylan was abducted, he would have said that in the very first 48 hours, where they could have issued an Amber Alert, but he chose not
right.
to do that.
Right. I can't speak for Mark. I can't. So he didn't say that he thought Dylan was missing until later. 2 days later, I thought it was in like later in the evening.
Well, if he would know Dylan, and if he would have paid any attention in the last 13 years, he would have known that that was uncharacteristic for Dylan. He would never ever do what Mark is saying he did. And the other thing I want to say is it's not Dylan's fault that he's missing.
I agree.
This is not Dylan's fault. And I think sometimes Mark, in his own way, blames Dylan. And it's not Dylan's fault.
Right. Yes, I agree, absolutely. And when I spoke to Mark, he seemed to understand that obviously they had to go to him first because he was the last one to see him alive. He seemed like he didn't have a problem with that whatsoever, but there has to be communication between you two because that's the only way anything's going to get done. But in the meantime, and I just want to clear up one other thing, and that's it. And again, I want to stress, I'm not taking sides here, Elaine. I'm not.
I've just
been given information that I want to pass along to you and to everybody else, okay?
And
there is a video of Mark being interviewed outside the, like, Dillon, I guess it's the Dillon Search Center, and he said the very first day or two he did go searching and was out there looking for Dillon. Are you aware of that at all?
He was with my stepson, Brandon, which is Mark's son, whom, you know, I talk to on a regular basis. And when he was out searching for Dillon, they were pretty far away from Vallecito. And Mark said, "This is stupid. Dillon's not out here."
So, really? That's what he told him. And so did your stepson say they stopped searching or...
My stepson basically said that, you know, how do you know he's not out here?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Brandon is, you know, he's such a wonderful person and got such a good caring heart. All he wants to do is find Dillon as well. And
mm-hmm.
I think that statement took him aback. You know, as we all, you know, Mark is very critical of where we're looking, but he doesn't give us any indication of where he would look. You know,
mm-hmm.
Mark, where would you look? Where does he suggest we look? We're only trying to close out areas. If he has, you know, any ideas, let us know. We would be perfectly willing and capable of searching wherever he thinks we should search. But don't criticize us and tell us that he's not in the La Plata County area and yet sit on his butt and do nothing and not search. If you know where to search, Mark, tell us. We'll search.
I think that is something that is a good thing for mediation. Mark did say something to me. I don't feel it's appropriate for me to say anything, but I think that's something for you two to discuss in mediation on Wednesday. And hopefully
I'm sure that will come up. I mean, you know, I'm hoping I get that opportunity as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
Mark, from the very beginning, he can ask me any questions. I just want Dillon home.
I know, honey. I know. And what can we do? Tell me what I can do. Tell me what other people can do. Just tell me.
Well, we just need to keep Dillon's, you know, his face and his name out there. And, you know, if anyone, and I've said this so many times before, it seems so old, but, you know, I really believe that it's a pretty limited criminal case because the reward hasn't even been hit on. So I don't know that, you know, people are going to know anything, but if anything seems different, if anything seems weird, or, you know, if you have any little piece of information to provide, please, you know, contact La Plata County Sheriff's Office and let them know, because you never know what little tidbit may help us find Dillon.
Exactly. It could be absolutely anything. How do Mark's kids feel about him? Your stepson, his son, and Corey and the others, how do they feel?
I really, you know, I don't think it's appropriate for me to speak about how Brandon and Alan feel. You know, Corey, I'm with him daily, and he's, you know, he's very disappointed. He's very disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very upset that Dillon is still missing. And he has no qualms in saying how, you know, he feels Mark knows more than he's letting on as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Corey sat down and talked with Mark. And I told Corey when he sat down and talked with Mark, I said, "Will you come home, you know, tell me if you think
mm-hmm.
he's involved." And he came home that night and said, "I think he's involved."
And the Dr. Phil show, that was... That, of course, obviously, Mark thinks it was unfair, and it was, he said he was misrepresented. Now, did he call, he said he's the one that called Dr. Phil because he wanted to get together and talk with you. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, what? I know that a number of people from the Find Missing Dylan Red Line page, mm-hmm. just warriors is what we call them. I don't even know most of them personally. Mm-hmm. They did an email campaign to Dr. Phil. Mark agreed to go on Dr. Phil, and I don't know if he had called Dr. Phil to speak with him directly or not, but I think that there was a lot of support from the Find Missing Dylan Red Line page
okay.
that also supported that as well.
Because he said he did call Dr. Phil first, that he was the one that got that going and got it arranged and did it all.
I
and the reason why, and well, I understand, and the reason why that's important is being that he was the last person to see Dylan alive, the truth needs to be known about him, and the misconceptions need to be cleared up. And Elaine, right. I swear to you, that's all I'm doing. You know, I'll do anything I can to help you find Dylan, anything. You say it, and I am there. And so is everybody. I'm looking at our chat room. Everybody is with you. I wish we could reach out and just hold you right now because we feel terrible that you're missing your son. And and just think about Wednesday. Think about, do your best, Elaine, for Dylan's sake. Do your best to just talk.
I will.
You know, you guys were married once. There had to be something good there at one point in your life. Maybe if you just talk.
I think that was a time in Mark's life when he was a different person, though. And quite
yeah.
honestly, I don't even know who he is anymore. I don't even think he knows who he is anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he...
But I agree with you, Tricia, that I, you know, the mediation, I want an opportunity to ask questions. I want the opportunity to be able to state how I feel to him. Dr. Phil, it was so, you know, there's so much that nobody saw, obviously, because mm-hmm. it was a long show. And no one was making Mark out to be the bad guy. Everybody just wants to find Dylan. And I think that most people, when they look at what has transpired over the last 6.5 months, they have a lot of questions for Mark, as I do as well.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I'm sure he has a different viewpoint, and I just hope that Wednesday, I am putting all my hope in Wednesday, that something will happen and the communication can begin between you two. And if I can do anything to facilitate that or help in any way, Elaine, let me know. But please know, and I want Mark to know this too, I'm not taking sides. I'm just trying to find out the answers. And just because I might say something, you know, about Mark, about something that he's done that is positive toward Dylan, or I say something that's positive toward Elaine, you know, don't assume I'm taking sides, people. I'm not.
But
I'm just trying to...
Can I interject?
Yes.
This is
please.
Not, in my opinion, about taking sides. It doesn't,
mm-hmm. well, exactly.
it doesn't matter whose side anybody is on. Everybody should be on Dylan's side.
Exactly.
That's the only side to take is Dylan's
That's
side.
Absolutely. And you took the words right out of my mouth. That's exactly what I was going to say. I'm not on anyone's side but the side of Dylan. Okay? And
okay.
that's who I'm on. And that's why I'm asking questions like this. Elaine, is there anything you'd like to add? I know you have to go.
You know, just that hopefully we will find Dylan and he will be okay. And we can resume our life and he can resume being a happy 14-year-old boy.
Well, we will do our best to help you bring Dylan home and to help Mark bring Dylan home. So thank you. Thank you, Elaine. And again, call me anytime. And I apologize. I did not mean to upset you. It breaks my heart, but we're all on Dylan's side, okay?
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay. Take care. I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Okay. Kimster, are you there? Kimster, Kimster. I don't.
I was on mute.
Oh, you were? My gosh, and here you are.
Yes.
Laughing. Kimster, this other area code down here, the 970, is that Mark?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
I don't know. I was just getting ready to check, but then you started calling my name.
It is. It is. I'm sure it is. Okay, everybody, now listen here. I'm going to have Mark on. I'm going to let him talk, and we're going to be respectful because it's not going to help Dylan to yell and accuse and all of that. However, I do want to ask Mark some questions as well. Okay, so hold on. Let me get the phone here. Mark, are you there?
I am.
Okay, thank you for calling in. Mark, we had a long conversation the other night. And, you know, I'm not, as I told Elaine, I'm going to tell you, I'm not taking sides. And as Elaine finished my sentence, I'm only taking the side of Dylan. I don't want you to get offended if I ask you these questions because they need to be asked. Okay? But first, I want to give you a platform to talk and to tell us what you want to clear up. Okay? What do you want to clear up that are the misconceptions out there about you, Mark Redwine?
Well, you know, obviously, being Dylan's father, and he was here at my house when he went missing. You know, mm-hmm. In the very beginning of this, I only did what I was instructed to do by law enforcement. That meaning that, you know, in the first few days of the search efforts that were going on with Dylan, I was to stay here at the home in case he was to return or to call home or whatever the case may be. And mm-hmm. as much as I wanted to be out there being involved in the searches, I obviously was told that it was in my best interest or in Dylan's best interest for me not to be out there, that I needed to be here at the house in case he showed up for whatever reason.
So you're telling us that the law enforcement told you not to search, right? Is that what you're saying?
In the first few days, yes. I desperately wanted to be involved in every aspect of that. But, you know, again, law enforcement told me that the best thing I could do was to stay here at the house and make myself available in the case that Dylan either tried to call or that he stopped by.
Okay.
Which is exactly what I did.
And what about searching later?
Well, I've made many efforts. The difference mm-hmm. between I think that me and my ex-wife is that I don't search because I'm looking for recognition in it. I search because it's the right thing to do, and it's what I want to be a part of in bringing Dylan home. So, you know, just because I don't go out and follow the cameras around and things like that doesn't mean I'm not out searching. Now, there's many things that
You're out searching. You're telling us that you are out searching, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Now, you know, I mean, at this point, here we are past the six-month mark. You know, I'll be honest with you. I don't believe Dylan's in the lake. I don't believe he's near my home. And he certainly, I don't think that he's in La Plata County.
Why do
you
think
that? Does
that
mean I know where to go to lurk? Well, because I don't think that Dylan is anywhere in this area, and he hasn't been from the very beginning of this. I mean, obviously, in the first few days, nobody knew anything. And so we were trying to sort all the pieces of this together and trying to figure out and understand, you know, the direction that we needed to be going so that we had a clear understanding of the areas that we needed to go to be able to find Dylan. You know, in the very few first days, I didn't think about him being abducted. You know, it came back to my attention that the dog handlers that had initially come up here indicated that, you know, they picked up his scent up to 50 feet from my house. And past that, there was no scent of him. So mm-hmm. even the dogs were having a hard time with that. That being said, you know, that kind of indicates to me that he could very well have possibly gotten into a vehicle and mm-hmm. known who he was with. Or, you know, he set out on his own and never made it to his destination. I don't know, but, you know, I mean, nobody wants to think that your child is being abducted. You know, that's what we have all these people involved for, so we can try to better understand what we're truly up against.
Exactly. Now, Mark, I need to point something out to you, and this is what gets people riled up. And when you guys meet for mediation, if I may offer this advice, because I have... you know, I see what people say from all over the world. So I have a little bit of a finger on the pulse of the public perception. And I know that doesn't involve finding Dylan, but I think it's important for you to understand. When you say things like, I'm not out looking for recognition, I don't follow the cameras around, that is a backhanded way to slam your ex-wife. And I think that's what gets people riled up. It got me riled up when I heard you say that. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. And that because you're – and here's the thing. Mark Klass would tell you, get in front of the cameras all the time. Don't stop. You know, that they used to joke about Mark Klass, the most dangerous place to be is between Mark Klass and a camera, because he needed to keep Polly, his daughter's picture, out there. So when you say that, it gets people like, whoa, what's he saying? Can you understand that?
Well, I understand that, and I'm certainly not trying to argue that point. I mean, part of the person that I am is the way that I come across to some people. And you know, it's not that I'm avoiding the cameras or I'm not willing to get in front of a camera. The fact is, you know, in particular days that I've been out searching, I've been out doing these things on my own. I mean, I spent countless days driving around the lake looking for any evidence of, you know, fishing pole, backpack, anything of that type of nature, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say that, I guess what I'm trying to say is when I go out and do these things, I'm not trying to call in somebody to be there. And I'm certainly not, it's not my intention to criticize Dylan's mother by any means.
Well, that's what it sounds like.
And I understand that, and I think that's part of the way that I tend to come across, which makes it hard for me to come out and speak like I am now, because I don't intend to come out across that way. It's just part of who I am, I guess. I mean, I don't know how to explain it any better than that. I mean, I'm not trying to hurt Dylan's mother. Never been my intention. My only focus, and this is what I want everybody to understand, my only focus is what we need to be doing to bring our son home. That's all I'm interested in. I think there's plenty of time for all this other stuff, the sideline stuff that's going on, to be done after the fact that we bring Dylan home. That is the only thing that matters to me.
Well, that's good. Absolutely. So there are some questions that Elaine brought up that I would like to give you a chance to answer. And like I told Elaine, I just want to get these things cleared up. And Mark, I want to say I really appreciate you coming on the show, because I know it's not easy. You know, you've had a lot of negative publicity, and you know, you're biting the bullet and coming on, and I really appreciate you doing that. It makes
As you know, in the conversations that I've had with you, I feel like I owe it to Dylan to sit down and have this conversation with his mother, and it's long past overdue. I mean, certainly, you know, whatever road we had to take to get to the point we are now, then this is the most important thing to me. I think her and I need to have this opportunity that we have on Wednesday to sit down face to face and have this conversation, because I'll be honest with you, I think that there's things that I may be aware of that she may not be aware of. I think that there's things that she may be aware of that I'm not aware of, and I can't help but think that working together and having all the cards laid out on the table, that it will make a difference in where we go from here as we search for our son.
Let me ask you some questions that are kind of odd that I think a lot of people want to know, as well as myself. When did you first find out that is it true that you said all of Dylan's clothing and his iPod were missing?
Well, to answer your question with a yes or no answer, yes, that's true. But to clarify,
there's a but. Let's clarify.
To clarify that, you know, it wasn't until, you know, a short time period that law enforcement had become aware of what was going on and was involved. I know that they immediately brought in some dogs to start tracking, you know, his movement and try to figure out the direction that he was headed. And the question was posed to me, is his backpack here? And I'm like, well, I don't know. Let me go look for it, because that's not something that I was looking for. So, it probably took, I want to say, the first day, maybe even two, before that was determined that his backpack wasn't here. My only concern was Dylan, and what do we got to do to find him? And where is he?
Okay, so I understand that. That makes sense. We have a chat room here, and there are some questions about mediation. You're the one that called the mediator. You set up the appointment with the mediator. Why don't you feel you could just call Elaine and talk to her?
Well, I think if you listen to what Elaine said, and you're going to probably kind of hear something similar to me. I mean, I don't think either one of us, to be honest with you, want to talk to the other. You know, mm-hmm. I think because of the communication that we've had during the course of our divorce, we don't talk to each other, and most of our communication is done email. In mm-hmm. the, in the case with Dylan, you know, obviously, you know, I texted her from the marshal's office when I was there expressing my concerns to the marshal about Dylan's whereabouts and that I was concerned because at that point I'd realized that his friends hadn't seen or heard from him all day. And mm-hmm. that being said, it was just the most natural way to communicate to her because I know how she is. And you know what? Quite frankly, we're not married anymore, and I don't need her to talk to me the way she did when we were married.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a human. I'm a father, and I'm somebody that you can sit down and have a civil conversation with. You don't need to start yelling at me. You don't need to start going off on me. You know, I certainly understand that, you know, in a large part that emotions run deep in a situation like this, and moms mm-hmm. tend to be a little more vocal with their emotions. And I don't have a huge problem with that until it starts to become accusatory and various other things, and then I just shut down. That's my nature. That's what I do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think I'm going to step outside here and try and look at both sides of this. You have Elaine. Because you were the last one to see Dylan alive, you understand this. You're a smart guy. You know that's where the focus is going to be until they can find out what really is going on. So here you have a contentious divorce anyway, and Dylan is missing, and so Elaine is accusing, which I think if you're in Elaine's shoes is understandable. In your side, you're saying, hey, I want to find our son, but I can't talk to you if all you're going to do is yell at me and accuse me of things because it's not going to get anywhere. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, that's exactly what I'm trying to say.
Okay. So how can you get through to her? How can you two get through to each other, do you think? How can you convince Elaine to say, look, quit accusing me, let's talk, and how can Elaine convince you that she's just trying to do what's best for Dylan, even though you may not think so? I guess this is the job of the mediator that's going to have to sit down and say, okay, hang on. We need to just draw it back and stop with the jabs, stop with the insults, stop with the accusations, and talk. I'm hoping that's what happens. Are you open to all of this?
Well, yeah, that's my only intention in this whole thing is to sit down and have a face-to-face talk with her and sit down with her with a third-party mediator. So that, mm-hmm. you know, there's somebody that can intervene between us if things start getting elevated to a point where one of us wants to shut down like I'm probably known to do, and one that mm-hmm. starts wanting to escalate the situation or start raising their voice and become accusatory like she might be likely to do. So,
okay.
you know, the purpose of having a mediator is to have a third party involved that is trying to keep everything in control so that all we're doing is sitting down as parents discussing mm-hmm. what has happened with our child, and as parents of this child, what can we do together? Because that is one piece of common ground that her and I both share. Regardless of our divorce, regardless of all the things that have gone on that, regardless of anything else, her and I are still the parents of Dylan, and it's mm-hmm. up to us to stand together on that one piece of ground that we both share and do what's right for the meaning of that. Need to turn over every rock, look under every log, look in every stump, and do everything possible. Now, mm-hmm. you know, I think that that's a lot of what you see going on around my house and the searches that are being done. I have no problem with that. I think that that's great because the mm-hmm. more we search the area around my home, the more we're going to realize Dylan's not here, and we're going to start looking outside the box, which is kind of where I'm at with this whole thing. You know, there's been so much time spent around my house, and believe me, there's a lot of forest and there's a lot of wilderness and there's a lot of area to cover. And obviously it's not going to be done in a day's time or, you know, whatever the case may be, which is
mm-hmm.
the whole reason I invited the dog forensic team to come in here, because they can cover with two dogs what it takes 40 people to cover in the same amount of time.
Got it. And you have also Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, and then that's why we brought her in here when she made the offer to both Elaine and I. I just happened to be the one that responded first. Now, my opinion is it doesn't matter which one of us responded to her. The fact that she was willing to come in here and do this for the benefit of our son is all that's really important here.
Got it. You have contacted Mark Klass of the Klass Kids Foundation. Is that correct? How did you reach out to him? What did you say?
Well, I went to his foundation website, and I got onto the email address, and I wrote him an email letting him know who I was. And, you know, I've reached out to him. I've not got a response from him. You know, I know it's the weekend, and I don't know how closely that's monitored and, you know, if there's other people that monitor and will forward that to him or whatever the case may be. At this point, I have not heard from him.
Okay, well, you wrote them fairly, like you said, over the weekend, and hopefully if you get a chance to talk to Mark, he can really give you some good pointers to how to use the media, and I mean that in a positive way, to help keep Dylan's name out there and to help people remember Dylan so they can be looking for him.
Well, and I agree with that, and that was the whole purpose that I thought we were going to do the Dr. Phil show, was to bring to a national level the fact that we have a 14-year-old boy that's missing and he's not been located. So that being said, you know, I guess I was caught off guard because that was my understanding of what the show was dedicated to. And I'll be honest with you, I felt like from the very first moment I walked on stage that I was being attacked, and I felt like I was defending myself and that I was doing everything in my power to keep my composure and not retaliating in a way that would make me look worse than apparently I already look.
Did you call Dr. Phil? Are you the one that called him and said, hey, I want to do this show?
No. Now,
That was my fault then, my misunderstanding.
No,
okay.
I did not do that. I will tell you that earlier on that I was contacted by Dr. Phil's people. And I, at that time, elected not to participate in it because it was too soon in Dylan's disappearance for me to think that that was of any value. So they had contacted me, and I declined to do it. And at some point, you know, I don't know who contacted who or what happened there, but I was eventually contacted again by him, and I agreed to do it. And, you know, I was also being asked by my former wife's close friend who was involved in this to a high level.
Okay. I really thought you said you were the one that contacted Dr. Phil. I'm sorry about that.
No.
And again, what you just said, and maybe this is the misconception and the communication problem you've talked about, Mark, and I want to, and I'm not, please don't think I'm being critical. I'm just pointing out what is probably obvious to some of us, and that is when you said, well, I didn't think it would help at this point in time to go on Dr. Phil. That is a national show. You could have got national attention for him. Do you look back on that? Maybe think you should have, or?
Well, I think it's, you know, as time passes by, you know, I look at some of the things that I've done, and certainly I wish I could go back and redo them, but I can't.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I can't change what's already been done. What I can do is change what I do today. And, you know, that being said, you know, in the beginning, I thought it was too soon for something like that. But, you know, my concern at that point, and, you know, you've got to bear in mind that, you know, I'm dealing with all of a sudden out of nowhere and my son's disappearance and all the things that are going on and things are happening so fast, I'm not thinking clearly.
Right. I think everybody can understand that. Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's talk about the search warrant. You released those search warrants yourself, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Why did you do that? I'm sorry. I got to turn my phone off. Everyone's texting me. So, anyway, why did you do that? Why did you release the search warrants?
The reason that I did that was specifically because the search warrants were issued based on the theory of kidnapping. And, you know, again, I'm not trying to be critical on law enforcement, and I've never used the word Amber in my, you know, statement that I put out there. All I'm saying is that here's the problem that I have, and maybe somebody in your audience can help clarify this, but, you know, this is the question that I ask law enforcement. What was the fundamental difference between being kidnapped and being abducted? And their answer to me was there was absolutely no difference. So my next question to them, well, if you had enough to get a search warrant based on probable cause, why did you not have enough to issue an Amber Alert to notify people out there that we had a missing child? And that is an answer I never got from law enforcement. You know, there's criteria that has to be met, and in their eyes, that criteria hadn't been met. That being said, if they couldn't meet the criteria for issuing an Amber Alert based on him being abducted, then how did they obtain a search warrant based on probable cause for kidnapping? I mean, to me, the two are the same. One doesn't mean any difference than the other. It's just the word that you're using. One's abduction, one's kidnapping.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I think, and I may be misquoting here out of Colorado, but I know a lot of Amber Alert criteria in a lot of cities, they have to have a car, and that's a big problem. They have to have a car description.
Right.
And so they can have enough for a search warrant very easily. It doesn't take a lot to have a search warrant. And they got the search warrant because Dylan was staying at your house, and that's the last place he was there.
And I have problem with the warrant. All they had to do was ask, and they could have got into my house. I'm not trying to hide anything here.
I know. Go ahead.
But the argument that I would make in what you're saying is that technology is advancing quicker than law enforcement or the laws are changing to handle situations like this. That being said, you know, I understand that they can get a search warrant based on probable cause, but it doesn't logically make sense to me. And again, maybe there's something I'm missing. That it just doesn't make sense to me that it would be easier to obtain a search warrant to do a search on a home than it would be to issue an alert for a child that's gone missing.
Right. I see what you're saying. Well, I think, like you said, it's just the criteria, and the criteria honestly needs to be changed. And actually, that's something Mark Glass has been working on. Did the search warrant come with the affidavit attached to it? That gives the probable cause. Did it say any probable cause that you know of?
To my knowledge, what I released was all that I ever received. So in the search warrant that I released out, I think it uses kidnapping as the probable cause to have obtained the search warrant. But that's my understanding. I don't know of an affidavit, and I'm not sure what that is.
Okay. I'm getting some of these questions from the chat room, so that's why I'm asking. Let's talk about the search. According to Elaine, your son, Brandon, said, "This is stupid. Dylan's not here," when you were searching in a particular area. And according to Elaine, that really took Brandon aback. Is that what happened?
Well, what? I guess if I said that, it would take somebody back. But I'll be honest with you. I don't believe I ever said that. I can tell you, if I'm correct in what I'm hearing from Elaine, that particular moment in time, we were going to search an area on the east side of Bayfield that has a road that travels up through a mountain range that is on the east side of the mountain range that I live on. There's no way to directly cross over it. So the road that leads to my house would be on the west side of this range, and the road that we were on is on the east side of that range. That being said, I was traveling up that road and received a call from Denise Hess, who was one of the people, you know, spearheading this whole effort with Dylan and the search effort and that kind of thing. And I got a call from her, and she told me that there was a camera crew from one of the Albuquerque TV stations that was in the video store where the search headquarters was. And so I turned around and immediately left and went there. But I would never make a comment like that.
Okay, so that was a, something that you're saying.
That's not something I would say.
Okay.
I have a hard time believing that, you know, I would have said anything even remotely close to that, because Dylan is very near and dear to me, and there is no stone I'm not willing to overturn. You know, I will be willing to look anywhere. I don't know where to look. I don't know where to tell law enforcement to look.
And so you will look anywhere, is what you're saying, right?
Absolutely. I'll be the first one in line to be there looking. Just like the day that the search took place, when all the people in the Durango and Bayfield area got together, and they had like 350 people out there. I was one of the first people there when they had, when they were setting up and getting ready, and all the people were coming in. And, you know, I was one of the very first people there.
Well, wait. I thought you said you were at home because the police told you to stay at home. Is this after that?
Well, that was in the first couple of days.
Okay.
Probably
this is after
6
that.
6 weeks after the fact.
Okay.
There was
gotcha.
A mass search. And in that mass search that was held, I'm going to guess sometime in December. And you know, I was one of the very first people there. And I would be the first one in line with any search. Now, Elaine mentioned something about a mass search going on in mid-June. I know nothing about that. I've not heard that from her, and this is one of the things that her and I need to get with each other so we can be on the same page. Anytime there is any kind of search going on, whether it's being orchestrated by me or by her, the other one should be involved in that, or at least be aware of it, so that they both have the ability to participate in it.
When you say you've been out searching, because this is kind of the, I guess, a bone of contention, and it's something that I want to give you a chance to clear up. Do you go out like once a week, every day, and just what is your schedule this way? Maybe you don't have a schedule, but walk us through a search and what prompts you to go there.
Well, I don't really have at this point a particular schedule of any kind. I mean, you know, I'm as dumbfounded as anybody is out there as to where to go from here. I will tell you that this last holiday weekend that we had, you know, there was a canine forensic team that had volunteered to come up and spend that Saturday and Sunday up here. Unfortunately, she was a little late getting here on Saturday, so it was in the afternoon when she got here. I've been waiting there since 8 o'clock in the morning for her, but, you know, part of the point in getting with her was to have a tailgate meeting, because here's what I see happening. If I'm going out and searching a particular area, and then Elaine and some of her people, the family, or whoever's with her goes out and searches a particular area, and law enforcement is out searching areas, and they've indicated to me that they're going to undisclosed locations, so it's like they top secret stuff or something, I don't know. But nobody's communicating with each other as to what's been searched and what hasn't been searched. And, you know, is it possible that we're all searching the same thing over and over again and not getting a different result? When if we were all working together, we would be able to say, okay, we've searched this area, we've searched this area, this area is an area of interest, but we don't have enough people, or we need to do more in this area, or whatever the case may be. And then we can all be out there searching in the same area and not be afraid to run into each other, because you know, tempers are going to start flying and things are going to start being said, and we're going to detract ourselves away from what is important here, which is really, in my opinion, is searching for Dylan.
So maybe that's something you can do. You can search, you can, you know, write down where you've searched and just give it to the police and say, here is what I'm doing. Have you arranged, like, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Those wheels are already in motion.
Okay.
I have a list of the areas that Wendy Kessinger from the canine forensic team has searched, so that we can share that with law enforcement if they're not already aware of it, because she's pretty good about submitting reports to them about what she's doing and what she's not doing, or what she finds or what she don't find.
So just one more thing about the chat, or about the search here. Do you have an idea how many times you've been out? Can you give us an idea where you've looked? Have you found anything? Just let's talk a little bit about the actual search as you go on yourself.
I haven't personally found anything. I have searched around the entire lake several times, both on foot and driving around looking in culverts and, you know, taking off little side roads that might go up into a little neck of the woods where people might be up there cutting trees or whatever the case may be. You know, I've been up on Middle Mountain several times, driving through there, trying to see see if there's any particular area that kind of stands out to me. It's a mile. It's a road about 10 miles long up into the backcountry. So, I mean, it's very heavily wooded. There's a million little side cutoffs for, you know, ATV-type vehicles or motorcycles mm-hmm. or hiking trails and things like that. So there's a lot of land here that we're talking about to cover. You know, nothing specifically jumps out at me in that, but, you know, there have been locations throughout because right now you can only get so far up.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until recently that I realized that they even had a gate up there, but at this point in the year, there's still snow up on the higher portion of this road, so they don't even have the gates open to be mm-hmm. able to get up there. Now, I do know in communicating with law enforcement that they've been up there, and that's how I know this in that, but, you know, I don't know exactly where to look. So, I mean, I get out and I can wander around and I can look and do whatever. And I think that the canine forensic team covers much more ground, much more quickly with less people. And mm-hmm. they seem to be more efficient in their abilities.
One do you search alone? I'm sorry, go ahead.
I do. I do, but only on a very limited basis because over the last 6 months I have been threatened, needless to say. And, you know, at first I kind of didn't take it too seriously, but people that are close to me and they see what's going on and, you know, they are real clear. Dude, you need to be careful about this. If you get off up in the backcountry and there ain't no telling what kind of crazy person out there that mm-hmm. wants to take you out. And so it does hinder my ability to be out there doing as much as I should be doing or that I could be. But I don't think a parent of a missing child can ever do too much. So it doesn't matter how much you've done. It's still not going to be enough until the day comes when you can bring your child home.
Right. And so maybe that would be a reason to, you know, bring some people with you on a search. I don't know about the gun laws in Colorado, but that might be a good enough reason to bring people with you so you can go out and search. So, you know, these bullies that are out there are just, you know, you can just tell them to go straight to hell. Have you thought about maybe getting a smaller? I know you said you're organizing a big search, but since you're in fear for your safety, have you thought about getting maybe a smaller group to go out and just carry some rifles when you're in the backwoods? Is that a possibility or no?
Well, and that's what I do when I'm with myself. I mean, I carry a shotgun with me just mm-hmm. in the event because, again, we're in the wilderness. I mean, you could run across a bear like the canine forensic team did here in the last couple of days. They came across the bear. Well, you know, you could be a bear or mountain lion or coyotes or I don't know if there's wolves out there, but it's that kind of country that you would expect that that kind of animal would be out there. So there's a wide variety of wildlife that's out here that you should mm-hmm. be concerned about when you start getting off into these back areas. And so certainly when I go out, I carry a shotgun.
Well, that's good. I just want to ask you a question about Brandon. You said that you did not say, Dylan isn't here, this is stupid. Have you
That's
talked
right.
to Brandon since then? Have you talked
yeah,
to him
I've
and
talked,
said, hey?
I've never talked to him about that because this is the first time I've heard that. I've
okay.
never heard that before. Now, you know, obviously I talk to Brandon, not every day, but, you know, we text each other. We talk to each other on the phone. You know, obviously he was in part of the Dr. Phil show, and so when we weren't in the studio doing the taping, we were spending time together with each other, having lunch mm-hmm. and things like that. So, again, I don't talk to him on a day-to-day basis, but, you know, anytime I feel like there's something that I think he should be aware of, that he should have knowledge of, I let him know.
Okay, good. So this is something maybe you can bring up and clear up that misconception.
I would love to have that conversation with him because that's not
good.
Something that he's ever said to me. And so if he said it to Elaine, then he didn't say it to me. And I can't help but think, being his father, that if I'd have said something like that, that he would have said something to me right away and that I would recall that. So I believe that something's not right here, and I certainly will be having that conversation with Brandon.
Wonderful.
And ask him about it.
That's good. That I think that'll be very helpful. What is the last thing you and Dylan talked about?
Actually, we were talking about several things. You know, I was talking mm-hmm. to him about how he was doing in his new school. We talked about the fact that, you know, he wanted to play football, and I guess apparently because he was late in getting registered into the school, they didn't allow him to participate in the football program, which was kind of bothersome to him. And it kind of bothered me also. I mean, at his age, I don't see any reason for any child not to be given an opportunity to participate in any sport.
Right. That's good. And so,
we talked about many things. We were trying to talk about what we were going to do for the Thanksgiving holiday. He and I had briefly touched on going to Castle Rock, which is just south of Denver, where my brother lives. That came up. You know, we were obviously talking about, you know, the days leading up to that with him having time to spend with his friends. And that was an ideal situation for me because there were many things that I needed to take care of being back in town because I travel so much that allowed me to go do what I needed to do without having to tag him along doing something he didn't want to do when he could be hanging out with his friends. So that was an ideal, perfect scenario for him to be with his friends as far as I'm concerned.
Right. So when did you notice that everything was missing? I mean, don't you find that really strange that everything was gone? When did you discover that?
I guess I don't find it strange, and maybe that's just me. And again, you know, when I got back from running my errands and Dylan wasn't here, I noticed that the TV was on. He had it tuned on to one of the Nickelodeon stations, like the Teen Nick station. There was a bowl of cereal from him having a bite to eat. But when I got here, he was nowhere to be found. Now, I obviously didn't think at that particular moment in time that there was anything wrong. It's not unlike Dylan to go off, because I do live up in the mountains, for him to wander over to the river across the street or wander up to the end of the road in the campgrounds, which even brings you closer to the river. Or, you know, he's been known to climb the rock wall that sits behind my house and kind of get off back there a little bit. But what was odd is that hours had passed by and he hadn't returned, because it's not like him to be gone for a long period of time. And that's when I started getting suspicious about what was going on with him. And obviously during this time frame, I had tried to call him and text him and I never got any response. So I immediately got in my vehicle and started tracking down his friends. Now, unfortunately, it's about a 30-minute ride from my house to the town of Bayfield. But along the way, one of his friends that actually lives up here at the lake, I stopped by this kid's house. He wasn't home, or nobody answered the door. And so I'm driving by the lake kind of slow, looking for maybe Dylan being at the lake, because I noticed his fishing pole isn't where it would normally be. I saw no evidence of anybody being down on the lake fishing. But, you know, sometimes with all the trees, it can be hard to see the entire shoreline. But, you know, I really wanted to find Dylan. So I made my way down to his friend's house that I knew where that he lived. And as soon as I got to his friend's house, and I knocked on the door, there was two of his friends there. And the first words out of my mouth was, "Have you seen or heard from Dylan?" And their response was, "No, we've been trying to get a hold of him all day. We haven't heard from him or seen him either." And that's when I got alarmed, to the point where I drove over to the Bayfield Marshal's office, sat down right next to the guy, had to pull him out of another office, but I tracked one down. We went in the office. He was on his computer typing in his stuff, you know, putting out a BOLO or some kind of alert to let people in the law enforcement, people in the area know to be on the lookout for, you know, Dylan, and gave him a description and so forth. And that's when I texted him.
And
now,
why did you go to the marshal's
office? Why does that?
Oh, I know, and I can understand that. Why did you go to the marshal's office? Just because it was closest?
It's the closest place. It's like it's not even 5 minutes away from where I was at his friend's house. So immediately when they told me they hadn't seen or heard from him, I immediately just drove over to the marshal's office. I could have called him, I guess, but, you know, it seemed to me the thing to do would be to go there in person and make sure this is getting handled properly.
Okay. Let's go back to what a lot of America learned on the Dr. Phil show, and how it did you not say you were certain that the male lady was the last one to see Dylan?
Shortly after Dylan went missing, the male lady stopped by my house and she was talking to me, and she told me that she had seen Dylan that day and that she had talked to law enforcement. And law enforcement had talked to her several times, and, you know, I figured that they were doing what they needed to be doing. Well, you know, sometime later after that fact, you know, I talked to her again, and she indicated to me that, you know, she was adamant about the fact that she saw Dylan, because what ran through her mind, and I'll never forget this, What ran through her mind was when she saw these kids walking down the road, the first thought that ran through her mind was, that's Mark's son.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what she told me. Now, what more credible of a person do you possibly can come up with that is up here on a day in and day out basis and is on
right.
every little road around here delivering mail than the mail lady?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
well, that's
in
true.
My opinion, if she believes that she saw Dylan, I believe she saw Dylan.
But now, and this is not anything to do with you, now the police have been able to track those boys down, if I remember correctly, and it definitely was not Dylan, so she was mistaken. Is that correct?
Right, but that all came after she'd been on Dr. Phil and after the many
right.
communications that I had with her. I mean, it took them 4 or 5 months to figure that one out. I gotta be honest with you. What took so long? That's something that should have been tracked down within 24 hours.
Right. Yeah. I mean, a sighting, definitely. And I'm quoting Mark Klass here just because I admire him so much. And, you know, what he says is that any clue that is found to be not worthy or not connected still helps the case because that means you don't need to think about that or worry about that again. So even though it's sad that it wasn't Dylan, at least now we know that those three boys, who they are, or at least the police know, and they're not connected to Dylan, and that is the good thing. Mark, do you have Wi-Fi at your house?
I do.
Yeah, and so it's something that Dylan could use on his iPod, right?
Absolutely. That's how he gets
okay.
on to the computer, for him to get onto his Facebook accounts and all that kind of thing.
Okay. Here's a question, and I don't know if I understand this. And maybe you do, Mark. Maybe it's one of those that have been out there. Are you a Facebook fanatic? And did you get angry at Dylan
no.
for failing to sign up or anything like that? Nothing like that.
Oh, no, nothing like that. Now, I personally don't have a Facebook account. I've never had a
mm-hmm.
Facebook account. I have no desire to have a Facebook account.
Okay.
I have a reason for that, but it has nothing to do with Dylan. Actually, I encouraged that in Dylan. I know he had
mm-hmm.
several Facebook accounts, one of which he would probably communicate with his friends on and one that he might participate in the gaming side of it and have those people in his little room or whatever you call it. And then, no, I never had any issues with his Facebook stuff.
Mm-hmm. But you don't have a Facebook account, you're saying?
No, I do not personally. Never
okay.
have. Don't want one, don't need one, and have no desire to have one.
Okay, hold on one second here. Okay, I'm getting a text from Elaine, and Mark, she says that law enforcement told you 2 weeks after that the mail lady did not see Dylan. Is that true or not true?
No, that is not true. That is
okay.
absolutely not true. She never told me. We had this conversation several times. Which
mm-hmm.
is one of the reasons why I kept pushing the issue, because nobody ever determined who these kids were.
Right.
Now, that may be the impression that Elaine got from law enforcement, but I'm telling you, and I see this male lady almost every day, and
mm-hmm.
I've seen her as long as I've lived here. And she knows me, she knows Dylan, she knows the interaction that Dylan and I have, and when she says she saw Dylan, I have no reason to doubt that.
So, okay, so here's the thing, too, and this is not surprising to you. Law enforcement will tell one parent something and the other parent something else, and they have their ways of doing this. They have their reasons for doing this. Maybe this is one of those times. And
well,
so,
it could very well be. All I can tell you is that a male lady is not going to go on Dr. Phil on national TV and say that she saw Dylan. When
mm-hmm.
she had been told by law enforcement that she didn't see Dylan. I mean, that's got to be pretty obvious to all of us.
Right. Okay. Yeah, the male lady has no dog in this hunt, and she has no reason, like you said, no reason to lie. So it was just a case of mistaken identity.
Well, I'm sure that was probably the case in the end, but I guess, you know, because there was never any clear-cut answer that was the case until 4 or 5 months later, and this was all after the doctor airing of the Dr. Phil show, because
mm-hmm.
I pushed that issue until you track these. I remember sitting in law enforcement's, you know, room talking with them, and I said, you know what, you need to track these people down. Oh, we're working on it. We're doing everything we can. We don't know if it was somebody there on holiday vacation at Thanksgiving time, and if somebody was in and out of there, or what the case may be. Well, you know what? That should have been figured out a long time before it did. But until
right.
I got concrete evidence that my mail lady didn't see Dylan, I'm going with the conception that she did see Dylan, because of all the people up here, she's the most credible.
I just got another text from Elaine, and this is something you guys need to talk about, and I don't want to do a he said, she said thing, but this is really important. Elaine is saying that, my phone just went blank here, that the mail lady did not know Dylan. Maybe the mail lady needs to call Elaine and clear all of this up, because it's a bone of contention here, and it needs to be figured out so you guys can move forward. And,
That may be it. And obviously this is what part of the need for her and I to sit down and have
yes.
this conversation, which again is long overdue. At this point, it doesn't matter who didn't call who. The fact is, neither one of us has called each other. Neither one of us has sat down face to face, and it's way past overdue. Only thing I can tell you about that is that she is my mail lady, and I have seen
mm-hmm.
her as long as I've lived here. And I'm telling you that she very much knows Dylan. She will tell you that she knows Dylan. She very much will tell you the interaction that she's seen with me and Dylan in terms of throwing the football out in the street in years gone by and things like that. So, you know, she says she knows Dylan. She knows Dylan. There ain't a doubt in my mind about that, because she has been around Dylan for as long as I've lived here.
Got it.
She doesn't deliver mail to the house that Elaine lived in. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
I will talk to the mail lady and let her know that, you know, if she's willing, I will let Elaine have her phone number and Elaine can call her if that's what she chooses.
That would be wonderful, because if we could get that cleared up, get over this little teeny tiny hump here and move forward. Let me just ask you a question about the Wi-Fi. When was the last time Dylan used it? Was he in your house with the iPod using it when he just got home? Do you know if he used it at all when he got to your house that night?
Well, I don't. I know that he was using it because he was on his computer. And I know he was on Facebook and he was doing whatever he does on Facebook. He also
mm-hmm.
has a lot of these little games that he logs into, and he plays these little games for hours at a time off of his computer using the Wi-Fi. Now, early on when I sat down with law enforcement officials and I was talking to them, you know, they indicated to me that he had stopped using his phone sometime after 8:30. I forget exactly what the time frame was. And I
mm-hmm.
argued with them. And I said, no, that's not right. Dylan was sitting on the end of the couch texting with somebody. And I argued that and argued that and argued that and argued that. Now, I'll be honest with you. I don't know if he was texting on his phone or if he was texting on his iPod. It
mm-hmm.
later came out that apparently he was texting on his iPod. The way he was sitting, I couldn't see what device he was using. All I did was argue over and over and over and over again with law enforcement that he was sitting on the end of the couch and he was texting his friends and he was doing something. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, again, I don't know the device that he was on, but.
Right. Well,
you know,
yeah, why would you even notice? You know, I mean, that wouldn't be something you'd be looking at the time. So, okay, well, that's good.
These are all things that were going on. We were watching a movie together. He had bought a movie at Walmart. Obviously, the receipt from the Walmart authorities were given so that they could see that the movies were purchased. They know that the DVD player existed because it was hooked up to the TV. They got the DVD player or DVD itself with his fingerprints all over it. We were doing all of this as we were watching a movie. In that, so, you know, in slow parts of it, we would get up and go to the bathroom or wander into the kitchen. I was finishing up doing something that I needed to mail to Elaine and got that taken care of. I mean, there was several things going on kind of simultaneously.
You said something in a newspaper, and I don't have the exact quote, but you said something like you didn't feel Dylan was in La Plata County. Did you say that?
La Plata County.
Yeah,
I say that now. I don't believe it.
Why do you say that?
I just don't believe it. It's a gut feeling. You know,
mm-hmm.
Elaine was talking earlier about mother's intuition and her gut feeling or whatever. Well, you know what? I don't think it's uncommon for fathers to have that same kind of intuition. And it's just a feeling that I have, because let's be honest here. Only one of two, you know, there's only several possibilities here. Dylan walked out that door. He either walked out that door and knowingly got into a vehicle with somebody that he knew, or he headed out to a destination and never made it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what are the other possibilities?
That's about it. That's what it could be. One or, yeah, something happened that it's a huge mystery.
Well, and the problem is, I see it, everybody has a theory. I have no doubt that Elaine has a theory. I'm sure law enforcement has a theory, and I certainly have a theory. The difference is that nobody's theories are exactly the same. But theories aren't going to get this done. What we need to do is fact. And the simple fact that Elaine and I haven't talked face-to-face and had this sit-down is one of the first things that we should be focused on. Now, unfortunately, you know, Dylan's got a screwed-up set of parents, in my opinion. And I'm not just saying Elaine, I'm including myself in this, because there's no reason why two people can't put their differences aside for the benefit of their son. And I'll
well,
be the first
right.
one to admit that I'm as guilty of it as anybody else, and, you know, for that, I take responsibility for it.
Well, that's okay. Well, that's a good start. That's definitely a good start. We have a question from the chat room about the search warrants that were released. What about the pipe that was found, I believe it was by a washer or a dryer. What was that? They took it? Do you know what that was?
No, I don't think it was a pipe. I mean, I know that they took off a covering where the washer and dryer hook up to the water source that's in the wall. There's a little plastic cover that goes around, and they pop that cover back. I don't know if they were looking for something inside of it, or they had taken swabs of something that they thought was needed to be swabbed or whatever. They didn't take anything out of it. They just took the cover off, and, of course, they didn't put it back like they found it. I had to do that. But, you know, whatever they did, they were either looking behind that cover for something, or it was just a matter of swabbing something that they felt was something that they needed to collect forensic evidence of.
Okay. And so you don't think that they took it, though, that they took anything? Because it says in the search warrant, a pipe. And I'm thinking, is it a pipe that you smoke tobacco in? Is it a plumbing pipe? Pipe could mean all kinds of different things.
I guess I just interpreted it as something, because I know that they popped that cover off as something that they were doing like I just described. It never occurred to me. I mean, there would be no kind of pop pipes or any kind of, you know, paraphernalia like that around that would belong to me. I do know that, you know, my older son, Corey, has been known to come up to my house when I'm not here. But, you know, I can't imagine that he would leave anything in a laundry room, so... I don't know what that could be.
Okay. You said that, and this is kind of, it may seem like nitpicking, but again, when you're the last person to have seen the person that's missing, these things come up. You are quoted as saying, we picked him up at the airport. Was anybody with you?
No, I was by myself.
Okay, so when you say we, it's just...
And I don't know if that was misquoted or something, but I was there by myself. I actually got to the airport, and I went to the terminal screens to look for arrivals and noticed that the plane had been delayed, and there was some delay in the plane. He didn't actually fly until, I want to say, about 45 minutes after his flight was scheduled to arrive. So he was late getting in there. And obviously, I tried to communicate that to Elaine, and she was all freaked out. Like, well, aren't you in the airport looking for him? And, you know, I guess it's just the demeanor in which her and I speak to each other. It just is overwhelming because, you know, it's something as simple as our son flying into the airport turns into an escalated event.
Right. And that, like you said, and I'm sure Elaine would agree, that it's got to stop. It's got to stop.
It needs to stop. And, you know, if I got to be the one to, you know, say, hey, enough is enough is enough and is enough, and I got to do what I got to do, then that's where I'm at now.
Got it.
You know, I'm only trying to do what needs to be done for the benefit of finding our son. That's the only thing that matters to me.
If, and this is a very huge if, but stranger things have happened, if Dylan happens to be listening, what would you want to say to him?
That his mom and I both love him, and that, you know, we're doing everything in our power, even though we're not doing it together, but we're working on that, and you know, that we love him and we want him home, and we want him to know that we won't stop looking for him until we find him.
Mark, I have a caller on the phone. I don't know this person, but I've been told through my producer that I don't think he is a person that believes what you're saying. I don't know if I should put him on or not. I don't think you should feel obligated to take this call. If I put the person on, they're rude. I will cut them off. But this person has a question. I don't know what it is. I'm going to leave it up
to
you.
I'll be honest with you. I didn't intend to come on your show tonight and have the conversation that I've had with you. I really think that it's more important for Elaine and I to find our way into the common ground that we both share and have the opportunity to sit down face-to-face, hopefully in a civilized manner where we're not at each other's throat. And I really believe that that is the first thing that needs to happen in proceeding on to where we go from here. You know, I'm sure that there are several callers that don't want to believe things that I say, but, you know, there are people that, you know, aren't quick to judge right now. I mean, the bottom line is pointing fingers at anybody isn't getting the job done. All we need to do is focus on finding Dylan, bring him home. When we find Dylan, we'll have all the answers that we need.
Well, that's, boy, that is the truth, and we are definitely praying and hoping that that happens sooner rather than later. We just have a couple more questions. If I could just take a few more minutes of your time, because a lot of people have a lot of questions. Let me get this one right here. I apologize. It's, the questions are going so fast, I lose them. In the documents, the search warrant, why did you feel it was a good thing to release to the public?
Well, because I'll be honest with you, you know, from time to time, I follow some of the threads on Web Sleuths. And what I see and what I've noticed is people are in there talking about things, and they really don't know a lot of information because law enforcement hasn't released a lot of information. I mean,
well,
there's been times when some of the people amongst the conversation are talking about whether or not Dylan ever made it to McDonald's. I can tell you for a fact that law enforcement has the receipt, time-stamped, dated, and has a list of the items that were purchased to verify that he was there. I don't know why they wouldn't release something like that, and it's probably a trivial point to try to make here, but there's a lot of conversation going on because there's so much speculation and nobody knows anything. Law enforcement hasn't told anybody anything. That doesn't mean that I can't go out and tell people what I know to be the facts. And I guess that I thought that by sharing with the average person the search warrant that, you know, because it led me to asking the question about the difference between kidnapping and abduction. The more information that people have and the more that I can provide to them, you know, to create a scenario where we're asking better questions, because I think this is one of the fundamental problems that I see. I don't think we're, as individuals, and I say this about myself too, I don't think we're asking the right questions.
Okay, what questions need to be asked? Oh, or do you not want to get into that right now?
Well, I don't necessarily really want to get into that. I will say that, the obvious question, you know, that came to me pertained about the difference between abduction and child or kidnapping. You know, but I think that the more information that we have as a community, the better we can do to talk about this in whatever form is appropriate, whether it be on Facebook or whether it be on Web Sleuths or any other social media source, that the more information that we have to work with, the more we can start asking better questions. Because it's apparent that my conversation with you right now that there is a bunch of people out there that have questions.
Yes, absolutely. Now, you've been going to some news outlets. How's that been going for you? You've been talking to them, trying to get Dylan's picture in the paper. What's going on with that?
Well, you know, at the six-month mark with Dylan's disappearance, I obviously felt that it was important to, make a statement or do something for the fact that here we are 6 months later and we don't know nothing. And I was a bit taken by, I seem to be, and maybe I'm wrong, but it appeared to me that I was the only one or not too many people were interested in that half a year mark. I mean, to me, that's a significant time frame. 6 months is a half a year. That's a long time to have a child missing.
Right. That's true.
You know, obviously, you know, over the course of this whole thing that, you know, I've talked to various reporters and things like that. And, you know, some of them I have a little more rapport with than others. So the ones that have been with me through this whole ordeal, you know, I reach out to first to share with them. And so, you know, I thought it was important to keep Dylan's story alive, to put a statement out there and address some of my concerns. It was never intended to be criticizing law enforcement. All I was trying to do is make a simple statement in that I think we need to start asking better questions, and I think that we need to evaluate how our system works, because I certainly believe that technology is advancing faster than the laws. And you know, and I know that there are people out there that understand what I'm talking about, and Mark Class is probably one of those people.
Can you elaborate on what you're talking about? I kind of feel...
I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. Within 24 hours, the news of Dylan's disappearance was all over Facebook. From that point on, 24 hours later, it had spanned the globe. So within 24, 36, even 48 hours, people across the world already knew that Dylan had disappeared and something was not right. Law enforcement's fumbling around trying to, you know, determine, you know, is there anything that we need to be doing for an Amber Alert or whatever. My point being is I'm not suggesting that it necessarily had to be an Amber Alert, but I certainly think that the technology exists in our community that would allow us the opportunity to notify the public much sooner than was happening. Now, I understand that they do their things through law enforcement and things like that, but not everybody's does social media. Not everybody's on Facebook. Not everybody is, you know, watching TV. So, I mean, this needs to, it's something that I think that we should have a plan for in all of our communities across the country. My point being is that Facebook was so far ahead of what was going on in terms of Dylan that, you know, I feel like the other side of that was so far left behind that, you know, they need to be more closer working together or something. I don't know the answer. All I know is that is an obvious concern of mine.
And have you thought about going to maybe some of the bigger networks, 48 Hours, Dateline? Maybe I bet you could get them interested in the story. Are you going to try and do that?
There's been some conversation here recently about doing something like that. You know, I mean, based on my experience of going on the Dr. Phil show, I mean, I think a lot of people would appreciate the fact that I'm a little gun shy about walking into an ambush like that again.
You feel that you were ambushed on Dr.
Well,
Phil, right?
I feel that way. You know, I think that not everybody believes that that show was all about what it was intended to be, or what I thought it was about, which was bringing national awareness to the fact that we have a missing child that's not been located.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit? Because that's something most of us have seen. And you're right, it did not make you look good at all. Elaborate on what you were told and then what really happened.
Well, what I communicated to the people that were, you know, orchestrating this whole event was, A, that we were going there to bring national awareness to the fact that Dylan's missing and he's not been found, and we were trying to get the national exposure. Those are the things that, as parents, that we always want to be able to do, you know, with whatever source of media that we can do that with. In this case, Dr. Phil is a nationally recognized show, and that would bring large numbers of people who may not be aware of Dylan, make them aware of it. However, you know, posting his picture on a screen on the set doesn't constitute having a conversation about it. And the conversation that took place had nothing to do with Dylan. It was more, I felt like I was being ambushed. And I felt like I was being attacked. And, you know, I felt this way about my former wife. I felt this way about my older son. In many ways, I felt like that with Dr. Phil. And that was a large thing for me to try to digest all at one time. I got all these people attacking me, and they're coming from every which way, and I didn't seem that I could get a word out edgewise.
And a lot of the show was edited out. We know that. Do you want to go into the polygraph situation on Dr. Phil, something everybody's really interested in? Nobody's heard your side of that story yet.
No, you know, these are things.
You don't? Okay.
I don't want to air this all at one time. My point
okay,
being
that's
is
fine.
It's really important to me to address this issue with Elaine on Wednesday. And I think depending on how that goes will determine how we each proceed from that point forward. You know, I'm certainly not unwilling to share with people what I think about the polygraph test or what my
mm-hmm.
opinion of that is in that. And, you know, the bottom line is we got a 14-year-old boy that's missing, and as family, as a father, I would like to speak for my former wife, but I won't do that. That our focus right now, and the only thing that is truly important is bringing him home and finding out where he is and what has happened with him.
Okay, and so when you go to the mediation on Wednesday, I'm going to ask you to make me a promise, Mark Redwine, that you will not, no matter how tempting, make a jab at Elaine, even if it's a backhanded sideways, up the side of the head, down, back jab, okay? Because any little thing like that will just derail it. Now, understand, and this is a difficult position to be in, that since you were the last one to see him alive, or see him leave,
well,
there's
I'm glad
to be...
you clarified that, because you said that many times tonight, that I was the last one to see Dylan alive. And, you know, I choose to believe that he's still alive and that there's still
mm-hmm.
hope that we can bring him home. And so
right.
for you to re-say it and say leave, I appreciate that.
I apologize. You got to realize that's just common. It's just common talk. It doesn't mean I think he's dead. It just means you're the last one to see him. You're the last one to see him leave. But anyway, your ex-wife, you've got all this history between you two. And now you have this horrible emotional drama playing out right in front of you. It will be difficult, and I'm not trying to speak for her. I don't know her at all. But you can understand if the situation were reversed, you would probably be saying the same thing she is. It's important to make this work for you to be calm. Just be calm. And then I would imagine Elaine will calm down. And then you can start a conversation. But
and I agree with what you're saying.
You know,
I agree
even,
with that. And
even if something comes first, right, even if she does it first, I'm not saying she will, I'm not saying she won't, I don't know. Bite your tongue and just work at it, Mark. Just work at it. Get a communication and a line open for Dylan. Do you have your
well,
promise?
I agree with what you're saying. And, you know, I will promise you that I will do the best that I can. I always give Elaine a little latitude in that area because being a mother, I can't help but feel that she wears her emotions more on her sleeve, and she tends to let her emotions take over sooner than she has the ability to think about what's going on. So I've always given her more latitude than I would expect her to give me in that regard.
Okay. So
but by the same token, this has to be a mutual agreement between the two of us that we're going to go in there and we're going to have respect for our son, and that we're not doing this for each other. We're doing this for the benefit of our son. And, you know, that's my only motivation in going in there. I'm not going in there to backslide her and make, you know, snide comments or, you know, any of that kind of thing. That is absolutely not my intention.
Well, that's good. And I'm glad to hear you say that. And I want more than anything, and I told you this personally, and I've said it as much as I can, that I want you two to start communicating, and let's get all this other stuff swept out and concentrate on Dylan. Now, Mark, if you're putting a search together, and I'll make you the same offer I made Elaine, if you're doing anything that you need help with to help find Dylan, contact me, because we have people at Web Sleuths that can also help as well. Okay? So don't hesitate to contact me. It's a great way to get all this information out there is just by contacting me, and I will get right on it and get it out to as many people as I can. Okay? So we're here to help you.
And my only thing that I want to add to that is that all I'm looking for is a safe environment for us all to exist in so that we can all do what we're really there to do, which is find Dylan. Now, whether that means that we need to search the street that I live on or whether that means that we got to search anywhere in the Vicedo area or La Plata County or anywhere else in this country for that matter. It doesn't matter to me where we look. What we need to be doing is something, and just bickering and arguing with each other just isn't getting it done.
Okay. I hope you'll report back to us how it went Wednesday. I hope to hear from Elaine as well. My goal would be to have you both on the show so you could talk about it. And the main goal is to find Dylan and bring him home so he can reunite with everybody and we can have a happy ending to this terrible, terrible situation that Dylan's loved ones find themselves in. Mark Redwine, I got to give you credit. You called in. You knew it was going to be tough. And you told us your side of part of the story here. And hopefully things have been cleared up and we can move on from here.
Sounds good.
Okay. Mark, thank you very, very much for calling in. I do appreciate it. And we'll be in touch. And good luck on Wednesday, okay?
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Wow. I don't know if Kimster's still here. I don't think she is. I think it's just me and my thoughts, which is very frightening. What Elaine was trying to say, and I didn't get a chance to say this to Mark, about the postman was that that Mark was saying the mail lady knew Dylan. And Elaine was trying to say, well, no, she didn't, because she thought some other kid was Dylan, so she really didn't know Dylan. That could be, it could be just a simple case of mistaken identity. I mean, who knows? I have a feeling that there's lots of finger pointing here, but the thing we have to do, and I will say this with my dying breath, is you have to eliminate, you have to start at the middle of the circle, ground zero, if you will, and then work your way out to help find Dylan. Ground zero is Mark Redwine. He was the last one to see Dylan. He was the one that everybody is depending on for information. So as soon as that is cleared up, his situation, then they can start looking outward. But nothing's going to happen until, and I don't know how, I don't have the answer. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know how to go about saying, okay, obviously there's nothing going on here, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. But I think one thing we need to remember, everybody, is sometimes a rumor becomes fact to people, and then it's embellished. And that's why you have to be so careful about what you say on social media. It's very powerful and very hurtful. And I'm talking about for both sides here. I mean, there are people that are love Elaine and don't like Elaine. There are people that love Mark and don't love Mark. I'm being polite here. And it's right down the middle. And both sides complain to me that Web Sleuth is biased toward the other side. So I guess we're doing our job, because if the other side thinks that we like the other side better, then hey, we got to be doing something right. If everybody's mad, we've got to be doing something right, right? Okay, kids, that's it. I'm heading out of here. Hopefully we'll hear back on Wednesday, and I'll be able to update you on Sunday. My apologies to Katie Wick. She was going to be on tonight, but Mark called in. We weren't planning for that. And she has so graciously agreed to come on next week to talk about her experience with the Dr. Drew Show. She's spoken to some of the jurors in the Jodi Arias trial. We'll get her understanding of that. And the Jodi Arias trial is not over. I can't believe I'm saying that. There's still the sentencing phase, so we are going to obviously keep on top of that. And my thanks to Elaine Redwine and Mark Redwine and to Cheryl McCollum, and to Rain and to Kimster. Kimster worked really hard tonight. Thank you, everybody. And once again, do remember that we have a wonderful sponsor. And the sponsor of our show would like you, if possible, to support the TravisAlexanderFund.com. This supporter certainly does. And he does so in the memory of his wonderful wife, Nance. Opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and guests, and I take no responsibility for them. Trisha's True Crime Radio is a completely separate entity from WebSleuth.com, LLC, and ForumsForJustice.org. In other words, if you get those true crime panties in a wad, my friend, and you want to say something about it, you come to me. You don't blame WebSleuth. You don't blame Forums for Justice. It's moi. Okay? Okay. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio. We'll be back here next week, same time, where we discuss current events and true crime. And we always do so with common sense. Good night, everybody.